Happy Wild Show here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. 1:10 a.m. Roger Badish is in our newsroom. Jess Rains is trying to get everything worked out behind the glass. But we're here with you until 5 a.m. It's our final get-together before Christmas for all of us, Raj.
That's true. Yeah. I will be here for Christmas.
On Christmas Day?
Yep.
Handling the news duties?
I will do that. I will be here from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Get a big shift that
Yeah,
day.
I think we've got all of the different shows on at that
time. Yeah, a lot of taped programming. But you'll still be coming in with the news updates.
Every top of the hour, bottom of the hour, sure.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then day after Christmas, I will also be here.
And that'll be back with live programming. Right.
Will be live programming. I think we go live after 6 p.m. on Christmas Day.
Christmas night.
Yeah.
Excellent. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's also the text in line. You're welcome to join the show throughout the night as we'll keep you up and have some fun with you and hang out with you on a government shutdown Saturday morning.
Yeah.
The government officially shut down at 11 p.m. our time tonight. Mm-hmm. Partial shutdown.
Right.
What does that mean, Roger?
Well, a lot of agencies will be working as usual. TSA agents, airports, the U.S. Mail Postal Service will be running. So you'll get mail today. You'll still be getting those Christmas cards and your last-minute Christmas catalogs.
It's a good thing because we just put most of them in the mail on Friday.
There you go. They will still get delivered.
We got Friday, Saturday, and Monday for them to get to people.
Now, some agencies are essential services, so even if the money gets pulled from them, because, again, I don't know exactly, and I don't think the government knows right now exactly who's going to be with or without money, but some agencies are essential to the operation of the country, and therefore, even if there's no pay for these people, they will still be working.
So part of their contract, then, is, here's the deal, at some points, as your government, we might not have money to pay you, but if you decide you're going to work for us, even if we have to stop paying you, you agree that you'll keep working.
A lot of the agencies will do that. Some agencies,
and that's only for the real, like, necessary,
exactly.
To the defense, to the security,
exactly,
et cetera, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like,
your military is still going to be operating at full tilt. So, this is more of a financial situation, and there are some agencies some agencies are going to be closed for the holidays anyway. I mean, this is the kind of timing that has come from this.
Sure.
So Monday and Tuesday, many agencies are going to be closed anyway, federal agencies.
Right.
This does not affect state or city or county governments. This is all federal agencies.
Yeah.
But Wednesday, many agencies, the door might be open, but there might not be anyone home.
Well, they would shut the door then, wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, it depends. Like, the boss would be there, but they wouldn't be able to get anything done because...
So all non-essential employees.
Exactly.
Administrative, mostly, things like that get some extra time off.
Yeah.
And they won't get paid for that.
Yeah, no.
But the ones that do have to stay in work will not get paid until we refund the government.
Exactly.
So, like, your national parks will mm-hmm. be closed, right?
Well, some of them may. It depends. I don't have a full list. I haven't seen anything yet. All the reports that I've seen have kind of been talking in general terms.
Mm-hmm.
That this, like you just said, the security of the nation will be fully operational.
Right.
That includes the airports. That includes... Now, the United States Postal Service is an entity unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
They do get some federal funding, but their operations are funded directly by the public
mm-hmm.
in their use of the facilities, buying the stamps and packages and all that stuff. So that is funded. Now, you might only see one person accepting packages as opposed to two or three,
right?
But that's what's going on. So
bad time of year for them to have a slowdown.
Oh, yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's a weekend, so that kind of works out. A lot of agencies closed on the weekend anyway.
Sure.
Courts will be open. Most courts will be open, though many are already, getting ready to go on a holiday court schedule.
Right.
But again, we're just talking federal courts. Your city courts, your county courts, your state courts, those are all funded on their own. They don't deal with federal funding. So they'll be dealing with people on a regular basis.
It's been very interesting. 312-981-7200, by the way, if you want to jump in at all. Earlier in the week, wasn't it just at the beginning of the week? When did President Trump have his meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? The famous meeting.
See, now I want to say that was that just last over. Week. Oh, that was at the end of the previous week, I think.
And where they all kind of went at it mm-hmm. in front of the press. You know, mm-hmm. Nancy was like, let's negotiate in private. And he's mm-hmm. like, no, let's have this out. Mm-hmm. And he said, I will own the shutdown. I will be glad to shut it. Now, he, you know, everybody's like, oh, he said he'd be glad to shut it down. Well, he said, I'd be glad to shut it down for border security.
Yeah.
You know, that this is the hill I'm going to die on. You guys need to fund this. And the Democrats have to come around. The ironic thing about this is he's been promising this wall. He said 2 years of owning both branches. They could have funded this by now, mm-hmm. the Republicans, without any Democratic help at all.
Exactly.
If the Republicans all got on board, they could have passed this. He could have had his money. Yeah. But he's never been able to get the whole gang together. So now he's trying to make this a Democrat issue. Democrats don't want to fund, don't want to secure our border. And the Democrats are like, we never agreed to a wall. We never wanted a wall. You said Mexico would pay for it. And now you're telling us we got to vote for it? Of course we're not voting for it.
Yeah.
And he's
and
trying to get...
there are some Republicans that are not...
backing away from it.
Yeah, they're backing
away. Well,
in the Senate.
That's why he didn't get it in the first
place. Right, right, right. He just didn't... he did not have the votes from the start in the Senate. He had them in the House.
Sure.
But... and they actually did pass some legislation that had funding for the wall, but mm-hmm. it didn't get through the Senate.
Right.
So, you know, there was a bipartisan funding bill that had money for border security, but not specifically a wall.
Right.
And he rejected that.
Right. Now his compromise is it doesn't have to be a wall. We don't even have to call it a wall. We'll put in these steel slats, which I don't quite get. I've seen that he tweeted out a blueprint
yeah.
of what this would look like. Very tall, looks like 20 or 30 foot steel beams with a sharp tip. So
yeah, but is there anything connecting them? Is there
no? It looks
space
like there's
between?
Space between them,
kind of like tall spikes.
I guess not enough that you'd get through would be the theory. I don't know what the difference in this is. If this saves us a couple billion on the concrete pouring, or why
I don't know
this is the compromise, or why he thinks that maybe the Dems would go for this. Maybe he thought, here, I'm giving you guys a way out. You don't have to say you supported a wall. You know, we're going to do these steel slats instead.
Now you're nitpicking. Now you're nitpicking.
I am?
A wall is... well, I'm not you specifically. A wall is a wall.
Sure.
It's a structure,
but Roger,
that separates one place from another.
We all know it comes down in politics to what I say I did versus mm-hmm. what happened.
I know.
And he knows that Democrats will never say, yes, I voted for the wall.
Right.
So if he can... No, it wasn't a wall. This is security fencing or whatever,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Yeah.
You know, if he can do that, then maybe here's an out for him. Here's a way for him to get around it. I mean, at least, I will give him this. At least he's sort of trying to negotiate. It seems an odd way to do it at the last second here to force this shutdown and say Democrats, you know, I guess they're both playing a game, right? They're both rolling
the
dice.
It's
and
politics.
Saying, what's the public going to say? Who's the public going to blame? Who's the public going to be mad at?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've got video of Trump saying, I'll own the shutdown, I won't blame you. But then a week later, he's saying, well, it's, you know, if they'd vote for it, we'd have border security. And he's, of course, you know, going to play it that way. And the Democrats are going to play it the other way.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, there's not going to be any funding for this. And I don't know where this exactly ends, who backs down. Because it looks like President Trump's going to have to back down from this eventually. I don't know how.
I don't think he will.
But how can he not? Because
he's got his foot in the door now on this. And he knows that his
how does he have his foot in the door, though?
Once we swear in
a new Congress, he has no chance at all. He had a chance, at least while Pelosi doesn't control the House.
Mm-hmm.
But when do we swear in the new Congress?
January, I want to say 5th or 6th, something like that.
So basically... they're going to reset. I mean, are they going to keep everybody there? I know they're re-engaging today, right?
They're coming back around noon today. Okay. Well, noon Eastern time. Yeah.
How long will they possibly keep them there?
Who knows? It's up to the leadership.
Okay. So maybe the leadership says, until we pass something, we're all staying here. I don't see the Democrats suddenly saying, fine, you can have your wall. I want to go home.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's possible, but my guess is they're not going to do that. So where does it end? How does it end? I mean, assuming that we have this shutdown for a couple of weeks, then we swear in a new Congress,
mm-hmm.
and then he's got no chance of getting the funding for the wall. from Pelosi. I can't imagine he does. There's no way she'd give that up right away.
No.
So he's going to have to blink at some point. Here's what I think. Quite honestly, I don't. The biggest conundrum I have about him drawing this line in the sand is the White House coming out and saying President Trump will not go to Mar-a-Lago if there's a government shutdown. I know he doesn't want to stay in D.C. for these 2 weeks. He wants to get down to Florida. He wants to play a little golf, be in some sun.
Mm-hmm.
He loves being down at Mar-a-Lago, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was very surprised that they announced he would not go if there was a shutdown, because Melania and Barron ended up going, and he doesn't want to sit there. And there's what's he going to do for 2 weeks? Once these guys leave, he's going to sit there and you know, not get anything done anyways. He's definitely going down to Mar-a-Lago. There's
well,
no
eventually,
way.
Eventually, yeah.
But they said if there's a shutdown, he will not leave during a shutdown. That's going to change. There's no way he stays for the whole 2 weeks. He's got to go down there. He enjoys it too much.
I know he enjoys it too much, but he's got an image that he feels with the turmoil, I think, that has gone through Washington over the last couple of weeks with the resignations and the firings and the other stories that have come out that have kind of beaten up the Trump presidency a little bit. I think he is at that point where he needs to set an image that is more presidential than many people have kind of felt over the last couple of years. It's if he has to forego Mar-a-Lago over this time, then he will forego Mar-a-Lago to make it look like he's got the country's best interests.
All right, Roger, here we go. You and I have made some wagers over the past year.
Yes, we have.
I can't remember, but I think I've won most of them. Is that right?
Yeah, dollar here or
okay.
there.
Let's go in. I'll go $5. That if this stays shut down for 2 weeks, there is no way he doesn't end up going to Mar-a-Lago.
Well, first of all, so this is the third shutdown during his presidency.
It is?
Yeah.
Well, the other ones have been like for a day or two, right?
Well, one of them was for a day. One of them was for, I want to say 10 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hold on a second. Let me get the details, because I really haven't. I've just been reporting on what is happening right now.
It's a lot for 2 years in office, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you're willing to negotiate for.
But I'm wondering with George W., with H.W., with Bill Clinton, with Barack.
I will look all this up.
Three
all
in
right.
2 years?
Okay. Possible third shutdown. So let's see here. Stupid. Block that. I don't want ads.
Ads don't shut down when the government does, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. And they're like blasting my screen.
Are
right
we going to fund this stuff otherwise?
Shutting the government down, hardly a new idea. Just 11 months ago, there was a several day shutdown over childhood immigrants, the Dreamers.
Okay, that's right.
And then under President Obama, there was a 16 day shutdown over the Affordable Care Act 5 years ago.
So wait, so is this only the second shutdown or is this the third?
This is the third for him.
So we had the Dreamers that lasted, did you say 10 days?
Several days. This story is just saying several days.
And then I want to say we had one with President Trump that was probably only like a day or so, right?
Well, no, that was the 16-day shutdown over the Affordable Care Act for President Obama 5 years ago.
Well, that's President Obama, though. You said this was the third one under President Trump.
Yes, I'm trying to follow your conversation there, sir, and I'm missing as I'm trying to read.
All right, let's do this.
Yes.
Let's take a quick break, get caught up, and we'll figure all of that out. 312-981-7200. Hey, you want to be involved? You want to jump in? We're more than happy to have you here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN.
I got your answer.
Could be.
So here are the two shutdowns.
Yes.
All right, so both of them in 2018.
So this is the third one of 2018?
Yep.
Wow, has this year gone that the Dreamers was just this year when we did that?
Mm-hmm. Beginning
of the
year.
Does it seem like longer ago?
It does seem longer ago, but I'm looking at the article here saying that the first shutdown in 2018 began at midnight Eastern Time, January 20th. Government reopened on January 23rd. The second began February 9th. Midnight February 9th Eastern Time, and then in the morning hours of February, like 8th to 9th, then the morning hours of February 9th, he finally signed the bill into law, that included disaster relief for Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and additional money for the military. And then this is the third shutdown.
Wow. Okay, so let's keep talking about that after the news real quick. 312-981-7200. Ricky's got something to say about that. By the way, we may not be doing our live show at Ishnala yet. We might not be able to get Bertrand Travel to send us overseas. However, the station has given us a pair of Winter Classic tickets tonight.
No way, Jose.
Yeah. So we're going to figure out how to do that. I think we do that in the 3 o'clock hour. Let's reward the people that really stick with us.
Yes.
Okay? 3
yes.
o'clock hour, we're giving away a pair of tickets to the Winter Classic. See the Bruins and the Hawks play at Notre Dame Stadium. How cool is that?
That's fantastic.
We'll tell you how to win those.
One for you and one for me.
Well, we kind of could try to figure that out, but I don't know how we pulled that off. Probably shouldn't have talked about it on the radio.
No, we shouldn't.
312-981-7200. Let's check your news headlines, Roger Badish.
Jingle bell time is a swell time to go gliding in the one horse sleigh. Giddy up, jingle horse pick.
Only a week or so left of really getting to enjoy these tunes, you know. I would listen to music like that throughout January, quite honestly. I don't like when it goes away right away. It makes me sad.
Yeah, I don't either. Of course, you won't have it. Well, Jess can find anything. But my favorite Christmas album of all time is the Williams Brothers Christmas album. They come out with, you know, different Christmas albums. This was a special one. One side was about 5 Christmas songs, some of them jazzed up. There's only the Williams.
Who are the Williams?
Brothers.
Was it like Andy Williams or
Andy
Paul Williams?
Williams? No, not Paul Williams. Paul Williams was not one of the Williams brothers. He was a Williams, but not one of the Williams brothers.
He might have had a brother.
Well, he might have, but this was not the brothers, the Williams brothers that I'm talking about. This was Andy Williams and his 3 brothers.
Okay.
All right. The ones who discovered, who did they discover?
The other Williams brother?
No, the Osmonds. Oh.
Did they really?
Yeah. Oh, Andy Williams discovered the Osmonds.
Wow.
And they used to have them on the shows together. And so everyone was 4-part harmonizing. All right, never mind. So on one side is about 5 Christmas-type songs, individual songs. The other side of the album is one solid cut. And they just went through about 30 different Christmas songs straight through. Not the full songs, but they
harmonized. Like a medley.
A medley of songs, one whole cut. No break.
That's long.
It's wonderful. I love it.
Well, we don't have time to play all that.
Well, all right, pick one of the songs. Jess.
Pick a little bit of the medley, Jess.
Yeah, sure.
All right, 312-981-7200. We're chatting a little bit about the shutdown that we're in right now. Ricky's called in, wants to jump in on 720 WGN. Good morning, Ricky.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. First, I want to say, Matt and Roger, I always enjoy you on GN.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
So, yeah. Okay, as far as the shutdown, I'm wondering if this could drag on a bit, similar to the Illinois budget crisis under Governor Rauner. Obviously, it's not going to drag on for over 2 years, but in the Illinois case, no, you know, Rauner was not going to budge, and that went on and on, and a lot of people were hurt. You know, a lot of services were denied, businesses went out, and it wasn't resolved until a bit of a compromise, if I can remember back, that the Democrats had to give in on a couple of things, but it wasn't until a few Republicans caved to make the vote large enough, which I think was to override Rauner's veto. I can't remember for sure, but I just think that in Washington, I don't think either side is going to budge for a while.
Right. It's going to be interesting to see, Ricky. I mean, I think there's no way to truly know. I think that President Trump will find some sort of short-term spending bill to sign. I don't think the Democrats are going to budge on the wall in the way that he wants. There's just no way they're going to. It's like he almost set the bar a little too high on this, I feel like, because they're not going to come around. We're changing Congress here in a week, and then he's definitely not going to have the vote. So he's going to have to settle for something here, whether it's to save face. But quite honestly, you know, the way that President Trump handles these things is he just needs to find the right way to spin this. Even if this truly is a loss, he's not going to get his money. he's going to at least use it to then chip away at the Democrats on border security. And that's what he's doing right now, saying they don't want to fund this when all he really needed was his own party to fund it a while back. Now he needs 60 votes because of the... Explain that to me again. Thank you so much for the call, Ricky. I really appreciate it. Why at some points of the year do you need 60 votes to pass something, and at some points of the year you just need 50 votes to pass it?
Well, I think this is the 50 vote. From my understanding, it's a 50-vote thing, and he can't get 60, that.
No, but again, he can get that. He's saying we need 10 Democrats. He's kept saying we need 60 votes. Is that to get it, to prevent the Democrats from filibustering it?
It could be because it's in an emergency piece of legislation. So it's not following the traditional path of regular legislation.
We need to look into that. There's something about when you're out of session, when you're something or other.
Well, they're still in session.
Yeah, there's something going on there that you and I didn't learn in civics class about. At some points, you have to have 60. I think it's to break the filibuster. I think Democrats could prevent them from taking the final vote. But I don't know why then, because they were able to vote on Kavanaugh and stuff like that.
In the modern Senate, the so-called nuclear option.
Yeah, okay. He wants him to take the nuclear option, which would mean he wouldn't need the 60 votes anymore.
To override a rule. Specifically, the 60-vote rule to close debate by a simple majority of 51 votes. And, of course, that would be the Senate pro tem.
So, to close the debate and bring it to a vote, you need 60 votes.
Right.
How have they gotten anything done then, though? That must not always be the case. When is it the case that you need the 60 votes to close debate?
Like, when has it been used in the past?
Well, no, like... I swear it isn't like you always have to have 60 votes to close debate.
Well, no, you don't have to have the 60 votes to close debate. People just don't want to debate anymore, and they call the question.
And so to force a closure to debate, you have to have 60 votes?
It's the Senate. I'm sorry. So the leader of the Senate would call for any more debate. There would be no more debate. Nobody would stand up, and somebody would get up and call the question, which means you're calling for the vote. And if there's no debate on the question, on the person calling the question, then the leader of the Senate would then call the question. They would take a vote on that, and if they had enough votes to call the question, then they would call the roll and actually vote on the legislation. Man, my brain hurts from my Robert's Rule of Order callback on that one. Oof. Does that make sense?
It sort of does.
You don't need the option there is continuing debate. In other words, someone wants to call the question before everyone's had their say-so. They just want to shut off debate and do this.
Okay, so let me read a little something from one of these websites about this to try and enlighten us a little further. In the Senate, the rules are a bit more complex. If the bill makes it to a vote, it needs only 51 votes, but you need to debate before it gets to a vote. The Senate fancies itself the world's greatest deliberative body, and they'll deliberate as long as somebody wants to. You can force them to stop deliberating by a cloture vote, and that takes 60 votes.
Right.
It used to be that it took 67 votes to invoke cloture, but cloture meant literally shutting somebody up. In order to deliberate, they had to talk. That's the climax of the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. That was changed in 1975 so that it wasn't just a talking contest. Strom Thurmond once talked for 24 hours. They removed the requirement to talk, but lowered the margin to 60 votes. So somebody doesn't actually have to be up talking anymore. That used to be the case. Now you need 60 votes to bring it to a vote. Mm-hmm. As soon as that happened, it became possible to block any measure forever if you had 41 senators. For a long time, it was done rarely, not because of the rules, but because of the customs. In recent years, however, the use of filibusters has spiked, and it is now considered essentially mandatory on any bill except the most banal. So that's interesting. So they've got like a chart that shows in the years since they changed it.
Mm-hmm.
110th Congress starting in 2007. Everything had to have these 60 votes to get through. And they did the cloture votes more and more often now. So it sounds like... So it's just very interesting. I'm surprised by that. So now the nuclear option would be Mitch changing these rules forever abolishing the 60 vote foreclosure and just you can bring anything. But
yes.
He hesitates to do that, my guess is, because there's long-lasting implications of that. If he does that,
yes.
And then say they lose control in 2 years.
Boom, now it comes back to haunt.
Yeah, so we lose a little bit of the balance,
yeah.
The checks and balances of the Senate itself, right?
Yep.
That one House with just 51 or one, you know,
right.
One party in Congress or in the Senate with just 51 votes would be able to do whatever they wanted if we didn't have the 60.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, it would be crazy. Crazyville.
Well, it would be for a week, but then in the House, the Democrats have control. But long-lasting, I wonder, like, so what happens? You know, they say go nuclear, and he's afraid to do that. They can't reverse that back once he does it once. Then that's the law forever?
Pretty
you know,
much.
That's the question.
Pretty much. Because once you do it once, then what's to keep you from doing it again?
Well,
there's no precedent. You've just set precedent.
I don't know, because, you know, look at the Republicans in Wisconsin that just changed all these rules because the Democrat's coming in to be governor.
Exactly.
What happens once he's governor or she's governor? Do they, if they have the votes, they just switch all those rules back?
I haven't seen all of the new rules that they've passed, and I don't know if they have put in this type of nuclear option thing where they can't change it back. I don't know. I haven't seen those new rules for Wisconsin. That, you know, what's going to have to take place is that those changes will eventually end up in the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Think there'll be a lawsuit about it?
Oh, yeah. They'll sue for change, and they'll bring it to the Supreme Court. So,
it's certainly been an interesting week for President Trump. You know, we've got this government shutdown. He announces he's pulling troops out of Syria, which leads General Mattis to resign as Secretary of Defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's interesting when that letter came out and MSNBC and these guys are like, it's a scathing letter, it's a big rebuke. And I'm like, all right, MSNBC, I know what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was, you know, because at first I'm just reading, well, he said you have the right to a Secretary of Defense that sees things more how you do.
Right.
Okay, that's fair enough. That doesn't sound like a rebuke.
No.
Then you get a little deeper into it. And he says, in my 4 decades of immersive, you know, goes on and on about how we need to treat our allies and how we need to watch out for foreign actors or bad actors. I mean, it was a very polite and a very respectful, I strongly disagree with the way you're doing things.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that he made sure to send out his version of events, didn't just take the I'm retiring, I'm stepping out. He made clear how he thought about it.
Mm-hmm. It's been a crazy week in Washington, to say the least.
Yes. Yes, it has. How many times have we said that in the last 2 years?
Yeah. Well, and silly thing is, as I do follow the news, even when I'm not here, because I'm an interested citizen of the United States, as the week continued on, I started thinking, how am I going to report all this on Friday in each newscast? I don't have enough time. Like, which story am I going to put first? Which is the most important?
Well, I imagine.
And of course, that was, you know, set for me at midnight.
So. Yeah. Yeah. The filibuster takes precedence.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you know, with President Trump and with any politician, you have to wonder how much of whatever's currently the news cycle is because they want that to be the news cycle. So this shutdown, this really changes the narrative of what we're talking about. In a week where Mattis resigns, where he pulls out of Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Cohen and all of that stuff.
Right.
You know, there's
the
a
Russia
lot,
investigation.
There's a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about the government shutdown instead.
Mm-hmm.
So politically speaking, you know, that could be part of the reason for this. And that's why I don't believe this will necessarily last long. I don't believe he's going to give up his 2 weeks at Mar-a-Lago. I think, you know, President Trump wants to get out of that White House, doesn't love living in the White House, I don't think, as far as like, you know, loves being president, but not, you know, the White House itself is an old building. He is used to really good amenities and things like that, right?
Yeah, right.
And Mar-a-Lago is probably much more, plus, you know, he wants to get to the warm weather. He loves playing golf.
Yeah.
We have not heard much of him playing golf in a long time. I mean, for a while, he was really getting away often.
Mm-hmm.
And these last couple months have been hectic and crazy, and he hasn't been away. I really believe he's going to want to get out of there, and he will back off on this
in a couple
of days.
It's a holiday season. It's the holidays. Yeah, exactly. That's a great Marx or the Williams Brothers. That's
that
a great
Williams
song.
Brothers?
That's you've got to do that one. You got to play that one. It's the holidays. I love the harmony they do on that one. So they do, and Dickory Dock, and don't forget to put up your sock, because just exactly at 12 o'clock, he'll be coming down the chimney down.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
Oy, oy, oy. You can shut the government down, but you ain't shutting Roger down, people.
If Jess plays it, I'll sing along again.
Okay. Just don't play that. Don't play that, Jess. Turn on your mic, Jessica, if you want to talk. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Matthew.
Happy Christmas. Merry New Year.
Merry Christmas. You have to open your Christmas present for me and Roger.
I will. Can I do it during the break? I shouldn't do that on the air, or should I do that?
Yeah, you should do it on the air.
Do it on
yes.
The air.
Yes.
Roger and I think yes.
There are two bags here.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is from both of you?
The green one.
The green one. That
the
only
other.
Says from Jess. You stuffed
the
Roger
green
on
one.
The green one says from Jess.
It's all right.
It's from both of us.
Oh, okay. You just took credit for it?
No.
I helped her coordinate.
Oh, God, you guys.
Show it to the cameras.
God. You guys buy me the best, worst t-shirts.
Are you ready, Jess?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go.
Hold
ready?
On. Wait.
You got it? Yeah. Wait a minute.
We all get matching shirts. We all have shirts. This will be the official uniform of the show, apparently.
Yes.
It is... Where did you guys find this?
I have my slice
of pizza upside down with a star on top, so it looks like a Christmas tree, decorative with like green peppers and pepperoni.
Mm-hmm.
And it says pizza on Earth.
There you go.
No peace on Earth, but there will be pizza on Earth.
Well, it's a piece of pizza.
Yes.
So, yeah. There's peace on Earth.
There is pizza on Earth and goodwill towards men.
Just tell that to the government.
You guys are hilarious. Okay.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday and Merry Christmas.
This tops the Matt Bubala Show t-shirt with the New York skyline that you got me last time.
Yeah.
I will say that. Thank you very much. And a gift card. You guys are too sweet. Thank you very much, guys.
Matthew. You're
I have welcome. Gifts for you both as well. That I was
oh, no.
Yes, Jessica.
You are also getting another birthday wish.
What is that?
You've
what
had
are you
very
doing?
Pleasant. You've had very pleasant weather this week.
I have, but I would like a white Christmas.
That ain't going to happen.
No.
That one
sorry.
I found. I don't know who that gift is from.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What do you mean you found it?
Well, it has your name on it.
It says
Matt Bubala.
It does. It's from Goodwill. Is it from Judy Pilak? Oh, this is just something that Goodwill sent us off.
Oh, nice.
That was nice.
That's
cool.
And this is just a promotional. Yeah. Goodwill promotes white elephant gift exchange. So is it
a white elephant?
Oh, my God. I got a copy of Ann Johnsos' Potty Mouth book.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
Very cool.
The cookie is also for you.
Thank you.
Well, I found the cookie on my desk, and I was like, this must be for Matt because it's his birthday. So I'm not really 100% sure.
So you found that cookie?
I'm not really 100% sure where that cookie came
from.
So
I shouldn't necessarily trust this cookie?
It's wrapped. It's
a
good.
Donut cookie with sprinkles.
We also have a lot of snacks from Krista.
Yeah, you said that there was a lot of chocolate from Engineer Krista, who is a wonderful baker.
She is.
She puts up great photos on Instagram.
I want her
and
to
Twitter
live with me.
Stuff.
She's Instagram savvy.
Yes, she is. Well, thank you for being along with us, everybody, while we exchanged our gifts. I still have to give Roger and Jess their gifts. And my gifts are kind of cold because I meant to stop and get you guys gift cards tonight. And I slept in late. I overslept. So they're going to be not quite the same.
And you know what I've done? And because you told me to stop spending money.
Yes.
And so I put another $200 into the account.
Good. What are we up to?
$100 for each of you. Almost.
Ooh.
$2,000.
Nice.
Wow.
That's great, Raj.
Yeah.
We're doing good.
Yeah. I got a an unexpected present from our car insurance company, from some deposit that I made on either the new car or on the junk car or on, I don't know. They said, we're returning your deposit. And I go, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And so I turned around and put it right into the account.
How much was the deposit?
$200.
Nice.
Yeah. So I, I'm following your lead. I have become very frugal.
Good.
So that's what I'm doing because the kids got to go to Disneyland.
Jess is throwing on her Pizza on Earth shirt.
You're going to have to put yours on under the lights.
Here, we'll definitely have to take it. Oh, you're going to, maybe the guy will give you a discount when you pick it up.
I want the pizza guy to see it.
We're bonding. My shirt, you're delivering? Come on.
Look at this.
Oh, all right. So we've got, hey, are we talking to our comedian friend tonight? What happened with that?
I have not heard back.
It's not working out. Just had a comedian we're going to talk to. She wouldn't tell me why. She said it was a surprise.
It is.
Aww.
It's a birthday surprise.
It's a birthday surprise. So I don't know. So that's going to be a really tough interview for me to do. Like, hello, sir. I'm not sure why you're on the radio, but welcome to the show.
I have not heard back. I think he's actually doing a show still.
So maybe that's not happening.
We might have to postpone.
We're going to talk to our friend Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com later in the show, right?
Yes, at 4:30 about a Christmas comet.
Excellent. And after comet.
Comet. I'm sorry.
Not a comment.
Chris well, the has comet a Christmas made comment. A comment.
And then we're going to talk to some people out at Stonehenge. It's the winter solstice, Raj.
Oh, yeah.
So there are people gathered at Stonehenge for the sunrise this
morning. Have you been there?
I have been to Stonehenge.
Yeah, so have I.
And I love it. I want to go back. It was wonderful.
It was very windy and cold on the day we went.
I went during the summer. I went during the summer, so it wasn't as bad. I would not want to be there.
Well, actually, we did two.
Oh, but it was windy and cold.
It was windy and cold for the week we were there. And we had just come from 100 degrees in Rome. And we got down, it was like 55 degrees in London for the whole week we were there.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a very cool place.
Yes,
very cool place.
It is. So we'll hear more about that coming up later in the show. Lots to do. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. After 3 a.m., we're going to have a pair of tickets to see the Hawks play the Bruins at the Winter Classic at Notre Dame Stadium on New Year's Day. Leading up to the game, though, be sure to visit the Hawks Hockey House, now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue, just south of the Blackhawk store, that's filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much more. There's the NHL Winter Classic Park. It's a free fan festival in Millennium Park. You can enjoy games, food, and drinks. Meet and get autographs from the Hawks from December 29th through the 31st. So that's coming up next week. Roger, the Hawks won their third game in a row tonight.
Woohoo!
That's great.
That was awesome.
That
good game,
awesome.
Too.
Good for
good
them.
Game.
Maybe they're finally turning
2-1,
well.
And then the other night, they ran away. Well, ran away, but because the other team had to pull their goalie a couple of times. So,
right.
You know, you got an open net.
Sometimes that helps.
I might even be able to hit that from.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, not really.
All right, quick break. News next, 720 WGN. So that's not, to me, that's not the version that I hear most often,
yeah,
though, Rod.
Just wait. Wait till the harmony here. Hold on. Ready? Here we go.
It's holiday season. The holiday season.
This is the same one.
To hang up your sock collars just exactly at 12 o'clock. He'll be coming down the chimney down. He'll be coming down the chimney down. He's got a big fat pack of bombs.
That was her live version.
Okay, it's a live version?
Yeah.
That's why.
Oh, you mean for the album?
Well, I'm just saying it doesn't sound like the version I hear on the radio.
Holiday season.
Well, the one you hear on the radio is from the LP.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this sounds a little different. Them,
yeah. Well, they're going a little faster.
Coming down the chimney, coming down the chimney, coming down the chimney down. Happy holidays.
In the cut you hear on the radio,
yeah.
They don't go into that second song. Though
no, they do that
song,
Happy Holidays. I hear that.
They do that separately. Yeah. But yeah. And I can't play you that medley because it's not on YouTube. I've looked for it. Mm. But I do have the CD.
So you'll be listening to that at home this week?
Oh, of course.
Good.
You got to have a Williams Brothers Christmas.
I don't have that. I know that.
And my other favorite song?
Yes.
Is from the John Denver Muppets special.
Okay. I have that CD.
You do?
At home. Well, now, I have a John Denver Muppets Christmas, yeah.
Yes, and that's the one where they do the 12 Days of Christmas?
Really?
You don't, wait, you've got it and you don't listen to it?
Yes.
Oh, jeez. So they do the 12 Days of Christmas, and Miss Piggy kind of goes crazy with the five golden rings.
Yeah, of course she does.
And I love when she goes, ba-dum, bum, bum, kind of like, you know, she's on the stage and razzing it up. Got to listen to it. And then, of course, who does the drummer's drumming?
Animal, I hope?
Yes, exactly.
I haven't listened to it in a long time. There is a song that I, there's a couple songs that I like on there, but 12 Days of Christmas is not one of them.
Really?
That is my, probably my least favorite Christmas song of all time.
No!
Oh,
it's
Roger.
It's a great, funny song.
It takes forever.
I know, it's hilarious. That's when she goes into the pum-pum-pum-pum. Towards the end, because she's getting frustrated that it's taken so long.
But I mean, just any version of it is like, all right,
all
I
right,
get it.
Whatever. Whatever.
I know. Sorry, I'm going to be a crabby old man, I guess.
Mr. Grinch.
You know what we watched tonight at the house that I have not seen all the way through in forever? Watched with the kids, Elf.
You've never seen it all the way through?
I have, but it's been forever since I have. So there were parts I'd kind of forgotten about.
Okay.
It's such a good movie.
It is.
It's
I will
really
give
good,
you one that you will cry
Christmas
at.
Classic. Okay.
Again, this is Muppets, but not the Muppets, but it's the same people.
Okay.
Right? With songs by Paul Williams and John Denver, I think, but I think it's Paul Williams, is Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. It aired once on TV. The DVD finally came out several years ago, and I got it. I cry at the end every year.
Really?
Yes. And this is Muppet puppet things.
So they're not the actual Muppets, but they're puppets.
Right. Well, they're the it's by the same company. And the song at the end was sung at his funeral.
At John Denver's funeral?
No.
At Jim Henson's funeral?
Jim Henson's funeral. I mean, that's it's such an emotional piece. You would think that, because you could see the strings and the this and the everything else, but it is just so emotional towards the end. The Gift of the Magi. Have you heard of that story by O. Henry?
Sure.
Okay, so this is a Muppet version of that, and it's just so beautiful and loving. It's I've still got it. It's one of the few DVDs that I still have, even though I think now if you call it up, I think you can get it on Amazon Prime.
Sure.
But it, like I said, it only aired once on TV, the original time, and it never aired again.
Was it not well received, or you know?
I don't know. But I always wanted to see it again, and then a number of years went by, and I said, "Oh, I'd love to see that Emmett Otter's again." And it wasn't available. You could not buy the DVD. You couldn't buy the VHS. You couldn't buy anything. And then suddenly, boom! It became available.
After Jim Henson passed away, I wonder if then somebody took over the estate.
Well, because there's a number of songs in the thing, so I'm sure you had to work out the rights to those.
Yeah,
because I don't think each one was by the same composer.
Right.
In fact, you go ahead and do your thing, because I know you got a lot of stuff to do. I got to catch up on some new stuff over here, and okay. I'll look for a little Emmett Otter stuff for you.
All right, sounds good. Okay. If you can play that later in the show, we'll listen to that too.
Okay.
And all of you out there, 312-981-7200, if you have a favorite Christmas song that you would really like to hear Jess bump back with at some point tonight, we can look it up. In fact, I think we got a request earlier, Jess. Can you find, let me see here, it was in the text from earlier. White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Dave from Monroe, Wisconsin would like to hear that at some point, okay? And I, of course, would like to hear my favorite. It's interesting. I was listening to Steve Cochran this morning, and they were talking about their favorite Christmas songs. And John DeCosse, I think, said, I heard The Bells on Christmas Day by Bing Crosby is his favorite. Mine is that song by Frank Sinatra. I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day by Frank Sinatra. It's a really good song. So maybe we'll play a little bit of that later on. But yours as well, 312-981-7200. We've got Blackhawks tickets to give away. We're going to do that. I do want to talk a little bit more about this government shutdown and just give you the heads up on what's going on. The New York Times has an article about kind of, you know, what happens now. Quite honestly, if there's a time of year that this is going to happen, this is probably not the worst time in some ways, because like a big thing is the national parks, right? They're going to be closed down. According to the New York Times, the most visible impact of a shutdown would be in national parks and forests, with 80% of employees at the National Park Service facing immediate furloughs. Timing, however, would be helpful. Many of the nation's most heavily trafficked parks are either closed during the winter or see major drop-offs in visits. And in some instances, state officials are planning to step onto the breach. Most parks, including the National Mall, would remain open without staff members to provide guidance or support. According to the department's 2018 contingency plan, the Smithsonian museums have the funding to remain open, its staff said in a tweet on Friday. Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona announced on Friday that the state would do everything it could to keep the Grand Canyon from closing and would pick up the tab for shuttles and public restrooms. David Frerich, a spokesman for Aramark, which operates hotels and restaurants inside Yosemite, predicted business as usual. In the Pacific Northwest, backcountry skiers at places like North Cascades National Park northeast of Seattle could find limited access to some areas and services. So we've got that. At the Treasury Department, 9 out of 10 employees at the IRS would be furloughed. Don't all cheer. They're still going to come back and get your money. Doesn't mean you're getting away with anything. Temporarily curtailing audits and other enforcement actions, but also shuttering services intended to assist taxpayers. Department employees deemed essential are those responsible for safeguarding federal property and administering treasury accounts, and employees directly involved in carrying out the shutdown, according to contingency plans filed last month. At the State Department, the issuing of passports and other consular functions are funded by multi-year spending bills and are expected to continue during a shutdown. Boy, that could have worried some people that were waiting on a passport or need to suddenly get a passport. But it sounds like they'll be working. Some may be curtailed if the buildings that house them are shuttered because of a lapse in funding. International travelers who suddenly realize that their passport has expired. Maybe some bad news for you. International travelers who suddenly realize that their passport has expired or who are looking to get a new one could be out of luck. Visa and passport services would continue, quote, as long as there are sufficient fees to support operations. So if you have travel coming up and you need a passport quickly, you might want to get out right away tomorrow and get everything taken care of to do that and try to expedite it. Because I don't know, you know, where this is going to head. Although I think, personally, I'm predicting a quick, I think this will be a 5-day or less shutdown. So interesting, though, the Department of Homeland Security, which handles border security and airport screening, deterrence of terrorist attacks, largely would remain open. It says the 60,000 employees at Customs and Border Protection would be forced to work without pay, as would airline screeners and security officers at the TSA. So Holiday Air won't be disrupted. However, I don't know. The TSA people don't get paid tremendously well. And that's a tough job and often a cranky job. And this is the worst time of the year because so many people are traveling and people are so stressed out. I would not want to have to travel right now and have a TSA screener who is not getting paid to be there, but is forced to be there. So let's all be a little extra nice if we're getting on airplanes over the next couple of days to our TSA screeners who are there and will be waiting for a paycheck that they probably need. You know, they're not making $100,000 a year and say, oh, it's okay if we skip a check, I'll get it back later.
Plus, I wonder how many will be calling in sick.
Yeah. I imagine for some, if they know they're not getting paid, they might be like, hey, I got to find some other work.
Yeah, which is really hard at this time of year.
Or easy, depending. I mean, there are people that really need people, although I guess that time is kind of over now once the holiday actually hits.
Well,
but there's so much seasonal work needed.
There's still, with all the returns and everything and the sales on the day after, the next week or so is going to be really busy.
Thousands of administrators and managers at the department, including in the Coast Guard, would be furloughed, depriving workers who have to remain at their posts of support. Potential for a holiday shutdown was adding to the stress of already difficult work with leave for many workers being canceled. So it's going to be interesting to see how far it goes. I want to talk about President Trump's new chief of staff or interim chief of staff. Nick Mulvaney is going to be interim, right? Because he's keeping his other gigs.
Yes.
But what's been interesting is what's come out about all the things he said. He hasn't been a huge supporter of President Trump in the past.
Nope.
Including just him himself and the border wall that we're having this big fight about right now. Let's talk about that after this. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, we're here with you all night long. 720 WGN.
I'm dreaming of a
312-981-7200. There's old Bing. A little White Christmas, Dave, up in Wisconsin. Thank you very much. 312-981-7200 is the number. We've got Jolianne on from Plainfield. Hey, Jolianne, how are you this morning?
I am fine. How are you?
Good. Do I have your name right? Is it Jolianne?
Jolianne, yes, that is correct.
How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, thank you. I really enjoy listening to your station. I'm on my way home from work, and I enjoy listening to you guys, too. There was a song from Cheech and Chong, actually, when I was in college. It's a funny song. It's called Santa Claus and His Old Lady. And I haven't heard it probably ever since my college days. It's cute. It's so funny. It starts out with, hey, Mama Sita, the vodka with the bony knees. It's so cute. I'd like to listen to it. I haven't heard it since my college days.
All right. You stay listening. We'll see if we can find it. Where are you coming home from at 2:26 in the morning? Where do you work?
At Morris Hospital.
Oh, okay.
I am a certified wound ostomy incontinence nurse. I take care of patients that have chronic wounds. Mm-hmm. And I also teach them how to take care of ostomies, which are bowel diversions. And I enjoy doing this line of work, and I've been a nurse for many years, and now I'm doing this. So,
well, I'm sure your patients really appreciate it, and we appreciate you doing that and listening to us for sure, and we'll see if we can find that for you, okay?
Oh, great. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right,
you
Merry
have a
Christmas.
Wonderful holiday season.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Joanne. Her name is Jolianne.
What did she say?
She told me, she types on the screen, Jolianne. So I'm like, Jolianne, is it? She says Joanne.
Or Joel or Ian.
Joanne.
Ian.
Oh, not Jolianne?
Jolie.
Just as drunk on 12 ounces of Coca-Cola.
Boy, thank goodness we don't have eggnog here.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember in years past, decades past, actually, Uncle Bobby's favorite Christmas song?
Well, I know he played Grandma Got Run Over by Reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
But now this isn't a Christmas song, but I thought Bob's favorite song of all time was Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road.
That and one of the Gladys Knight and the Pips songs. I forgot which one it was.
Okay.
But this was one of his favorite Christmas songs. It's actually a novelty song called The Pretty Little Dolly.
Oh, my gosh. My mother-in-law her mother played Pretty Little Dolly for her every Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And the lady who did this, Mona Aboud.
Mona Aboud. Yes, I remember Mona.
And I think she was local.
She used to be in here. Yes.
She was local, and she actually, Johnny Carson found out about her,
That's
and she
right.
appeared on Carson.
The Carson Show, yes.
And she sang The Pretty Little Dolly.
Dear Santa Claus, my mommy and daddy said that if I was very good, I could have whatever I wanted for Christmas. Well, I would like a dolly for Christmas. It is a very special dolly. I saw it advertised on television. In case you don't know which dolly I mean, I will try to describe it to you. The pretty little dolly can sit. The pretty little dolly can stand. She will even walk around the room if you take her hand. The pretty little dolly can turn. The pretty little dolly can dance. If you feed her water through a tube, she will wet her pants. told her she would see high above her head and she passes out.
Is this on Carson itself?
Yeah.
It's not a short song.
No. And they keep cutting away to Carson. He just got these looks.
Is he shaking his head like, what the hell's going on here?
He's staring like he's total disbelief. He's total disbelief.
Before she gets married, we're going to have to cut away from this.
Go ahead.
312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Babalahi with you here all night long. We're going to chat with some friends at Stonehenge after the 3 o'clock hour, talk about the winter solstice and learn a little bit more about Stonehenge. Our buddy Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com will chat with us about a recent space launch and what's going on with NASA. They'll get shut down a little bit, but they'll maintain all of their functions. But I wonder if there's anything coming up that could be affected by that. We'll find out more about that. As well as talk to you, 312-981-7200, 231 in the morning. Let's check some headlines, Mr. Yeah. Baddish.
Like a flower.
From Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Oh, this is? Okay, so these are Muppets singing this?
Yeah.
I thought this was going into I Want to Buy the World a Coke.
No.
The beginning of that song really sounds like it could go right into that, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a mother and a son. The father had passed away, and they're trying to make ends meet. She does laundry. He does repairs around the area. He wanted a... I'm trying to think. Oh, she had to sell the pail that he was going to use for his jug band. He was going to make one of those bass fiddles kind of things.
Uh-huh.
And she had to sell that to get him something. And then he had to go sell something to get her cloth for a new dress, because they were both going to perform at this fundraiser or this contest in order to win some money so they could buy each other the same thing. So it's the story of the Magi again. And this is the song that was sung at Jim Henson's funeral. And it's a Christmas story because it happens at Christmas time and they're giving presents and stuff.
Our texter wanted to hear some Cheech and Chong, or our caller that we spoke to once, hear some Cheech and Chong. Jess is looking that up, and a texter mentions it includes a lot of drug puns and jokes. So we'll see if we can find 30 clean seconds to play later in the show.
A Christmas Cheech and Chong?
Santa Claus and His Old Lady.
Oh, my God.
By Cheech and Chong. Santa Claus and His Old Lady. We'll see if there's some of that we can play.
Yeah.
Mike and Ravenswood would like to hear Bing Crosby and David Bowie sing Peace on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
We can play a little bit of that later.
Sure.
Day 779 asks if we could play 12 Days of Christmas by Dave McKay. No, I'm sorry. We cannot. Personally, I do not like 12 Days of Christmas. I'm not playing 12 Days of Christmas. I apologize.
We only have 2.5 hours left.
Yeah. Speaking of, 847 says, please play Pretty Little Dolly to the end. I haven't heard it in years. I'm sorry. I'm not going all the way to the end of that song. I went as far as I could.
Halfway through.
That was only halfway?
Yeah.
Well, she was hitting puberty. Does she get married and, like, get old in it? Seriously, does she, like, make it to, like, menopause?
No, she just goes off on Santa Claus at the end.
I could hear, like, Pretty Little Dolly having hot flashes or something was coming. 312-981-7200. Vic is on 720. Hey, Vic, good morning. How are you?
Okay, Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Yeah, I used to be with Ed Schwartz when he used to do the programs on WGN, the Chicago History Panel, and we would do it once a month for a five-hour show and just talk Chicago history and trivia. And at this time of the season, probably some of our favorite stories was Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer being born on Chicago Avenue at the old Montgomery Ward's building at Chicago and Larrabee. It was done by the copywriter there. And later on, of course, one of the classic other ones was the Polk brothers doing their giveaways of the Christmas trees, aluminum, and the Santa Claus for the roofs or in front of the house. Everybody was, you know, getting those. And then for a lot of people in the neighborhood, or Diversity in Pulaski, the old Olson Rug, which is now a Marshall Fields building that's going to be turned into condominiums. They had the Christmas little Santa Claus displays over there, and a lot of people from the neighborhood would visit that little park there.
Sure. Let's talk about, do you have your radio turned up, by the way? I'm hearing you echo back. Vic, can you turn the radio down?
No, the radio was off.
Maybe that's just coming through your headset. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the Montgomery Ward story, because I know that Rudolph was, like you said, a copywriter. It was just a story in, like, the catalog, right, that they sent out?
Yeah, well, he did it as he was a copywriter on it. And I think it's about 1938, and he did. Let's come up with an idea. He came up with the idea, and then they ran it for a few years. They kind of stopped it when World War II came out. Everybody's cutting back on paper and supplies, and they did it a couple years after the war, and they gave them back the rights that belongs to the family. And a name, and for a while he was living around Diversey and Racine, and then I met him in later years, probably about 1968. He was living in Evanston or Skokie, right over there, and he had the Rudolph on the front lawn that kind of lit up, and he said, "I brought my family a lot of money."
So wait, the guy that invented Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a Rudolph on his front lawn?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, so it's just, you know, one of the little stories and yeah. Over there, and I'm still into Chicago history. In fact, I just talked to a bunch of people about a Christmas in Chicago at the end of World War II. Just think about that, when the boys were coming home in 1945, what a difference it made to the people, and rationing was over, no more blackouts, and a lot of things like that.
Yeah, it had to be a pretty amazing time and a pretty special Christmas.
And a favorite one for many people is the Cinnamon Bear that was done by Weebolts.
What's that
story?
They
had a little Cinnamon Bear song, and then they had a Cinnamon Bear calling thing, and I think Weebolts at one time had like an hour show about the Cinnamon Bear.
And there's actually a series of Cinnamon Bear episodes from many, many years ago. I think that is actually played on Darnell's old radio show on the weekends.
Yeah, the old radio shows. It's kind of favorite, and in the neighborhood stores where Weebolts were, it was kind of a big thing. It went try to win the prize, and it had the show and everything. It's kind of the old-fashioned Chicago Christmases.
Vic, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate, you know, reminiscing. And he mentions you used to be on with Chicago Ed, Eddie Schwartz, who was here on WGN for a long time. Mm-hmm. And WBBM News Radio just had the food drive last week, continuing in Ed's tradition that he started, I think, here. He was on various stations, but he was here for a long time and did that overnight food drive for many years. I know Max Armstrong had put out a picture this week on his Twitter
feed. That.
Of him at, he said it was always the coldest night of the year, and and they were outdoors doing that food drive. Did they always do that outdoors every year?
Yep. They had a couple of semi-trailer trucks pulled up in the lot, and people just come up and just start giving food.
And where would they do it at? Was it different
every
year?
It was at the TV studios, because remember, TV and radio were here for many, many years, at the Tribune Tower.
Right.
Then they built the facility over on Addison, across from Lane Tech, and radio and TV moved there.
Right.
Then radio at some point, I think in this,
86, moved
decided to come back to the Trip Tower.
Yeah.
So, in fact, that the room up on the seventh floor, I think we talked about this before, the conference room was actually one of the old studios on the seventh floor at the Tribune building.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Did you ever look up on the wall, high up on one of the walls? There was a window up there.
In Campbell Hall?
Yeah. Did you ever look up and see that window?
In Campbell Hall, I don't remember. Well, there were some windows on the left side of the room because it went into the middle part of the tower.
Yeah, no. This was higher up on the wall.
Okay.
On the east side of, in other words, where the main offices were. On that side, that's the old control room.
So there's still a window up there, but
there's still a window.
Didn't
I don't know
go
what
to anything.
Well, I don't know. I didn't get to sneak up.
Sure. Oh, how interesting is that?
Yeah,
I miss that old building. I mean, I love the new digs here. They're beautiful and everything's nice. But that old tower had a lot of character.
A lot of stories.
And, you know, I was, when was it? So I did the show, I filled in for Bill and Wendy. I was with Amy Guth this week. I did a Bill and Wendy show this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was walking back to my car and I went by the tower. And they are, you know, they're heavily in construction. The tower's walled off.
They're ripping everything.
Howells and Hoods is closed down. The Dillon's candy store is closed down. There's nothing you can go shop at right now. Right. Everything's closed down. And, you know, they took down the big WGN radio letters, and, mm-hmm. and you could see lots of little outside pieces of the facade are missing as they repair things. But on the backside...
parking lot?
No, not the back. On the other side, the part that's not the tower, but the additional building.
Oh, so, right, where the old TV stage used to be, the stage for the radio shows used to be.
Well, the TV building. Okay. So you have the tower. So right. The Tribune Tower is four buildings.
Mm-hmm.
There was the original Tribune building, which is actually behind the Tribune Tower. It's mm-hmm. it's east of the Tribune Tower. That was the building that was there before they built the tower. Then right in front of that, they built the Tribune Tower. And then a few years later, they build the WGN radio building, which is just the four-floor building that most recently was Dillon's Candy Store.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And was the Tribune Freedom Museum for a while, things like that.
It was
that.
The opposite. It's just on the other side of Nathan Hale Court.
Correct.
Right.
So that's the small building that connects. And then mm-hmm. behind that... is the WGN-TV building that they built then a few years later from that. That WGN-TV building has like a weird, so it's just a big rectangle, but it has kind of a part that goes up in the air on the roof about another two stories. I don't know if it's just stairway or what it was. That is torn open right now.
Oh,
as you walk by. In fact, I got pictures I can show you. I'll put out the pictures on our on our Facebook page at Matt Bubala Show if you give that a like. But it's just interesting to see that they're really, you know, starting to... tear that apart.
Yeah, it's
I would love to have a condo in that building.
Somebody else posted pictures. I think it was someone from here, I can't remember, of like a different angle of the Trib Tower and how the facade at the top, mm-hmm. the crown, is not lit right now, and that there's just like work lights.
Well, that's probably
out
true
of some of the
because
windows.
When you look up from the top. So there's a couple of tops to it, right?
I'm talking about the one at the front, the iconic look.
Right, all the way at the top. But then there's a second top, right? There's like two sort of little outlooks.
Yeah.
But all of that up top where the buttresses are, the flying buttresses, mm-hmm. is all scaffolding. So it's probably not lit up at all right now.
Yeah.
Just
but
work
still.
Because they have scaffolding surrounding all of that right now.
Compared to what that building looked like at Christmas time.
Oh, sure. It's missing all the beautiful decorations we always had. But what's interesting is when you see the old photos of the tower from like the 40s and 50s,
mm-hmm.
it was blackened.
Oh, yeah. A lot
the
of the buildings downtown.
And everything.
Sure.
I mean, it's amazing to look at some of the old photos and think, wow, were we breathing that in at the time?
Yes.
Because even in recent years, it's looked so much better than that. And now I'm sure they'll get it completely cleaned up when they reopen it and start selling these million-dollar condos.
Yeah, well, we'll get a condo in that building when we, same time we get a broadcast at Ishinala.
Hey, listen, I'm planning on it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to make the money some way. Somehow, some way, Roger.
You got the plan, man.
Yes. Yes, I do. 2019's the year. Did you, by the way, I gave you a little Christmas gift.
I know. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Did you get a chance to open the card?
I am doing that right now, but thank you for the sweets. You know, that's
you're welcome.
Near and dear to my
heart. You
and
I don't need those.
I know, but that's, you know.
But my card.
I've stopped going to the doctor. How about that?
Oh, okay. Well, then everything's good. The card I picked out because... it made me think of you and me in the eyes of Jess.
Oh, my God. 'Tis the season to be jolly.
The card says, 'tis the season to be jolly.
Have a warm and cozy Christmas. Aw. This is beautiful. Did you make this yourself?
No.
Looks like you made it yourself.
I did not have that
no,
time.
No, I mean, it's
time
got
on
that.
My it's it got does that. Have a little homemade feel,
yeah,
but no. I didn't
it does.
I'm not. I am crafty, but not that crafty. But I wrote in there, let's you and I commit to not being so jolly in the new year. Because Jess says, because Roger and I are a little on the girthier side, she calls us jolly.
Oh, I see. Excuse that's code
me.
Word,
you
huh?
called me jolly earlier
that's a
this
code
year,
word.
Jess.
I gotcha. All right, jolly as in, instead of as in ha ha ha, it's more like ho ho
yeah.
ho. Okay,
she thinks we're a little ho ho ho.
Really?
Or that we've had too many ho-ho-hos. I don't know. One of the two.
I hear they have Christmas ones out.
You know, there's like 18 different kinds of Twinkies now and cupcakes. I don't want a strawberry Twinkie. I want the regular one. Well, and you can tempt me with almost anything that you're suddenly adding chocolate to.
Right.
But even those, I'm looking at these Twinkies like, why are we doing this?
Well, because they're
I know, because you want to sell them something new and something different.
That's why everything in the world has pumpkin spice. Cleaning lotion, like for your sinks.
Yeah, but that can
powder,
smell
pumpkin spice.
If it smells good, I'm fine with that.
I don't want pumpkin spice in everything. First of all, I don't care for pumpkin spice.
Well, if
just,
you did.
That's just me. If I did, I would not. It's like overload. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like you have so much of it, you can't stand it anymore. I don't know what it is.
Well, we do tend to overload with things these days. I mean, we overload at Christmas because I do think, though, it's because we have such a short amount of time. I mean, for the people that market products that are pumpkin spice, you've got this month and a half leading up to Halloween-ish, right?
Through
Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
so they go earlier and earlier, and they, you know, it became hot, so then more and more products get it. Christmas starts earlier and earlier because we have this little amount of time, so we want to enjoy it more and or sell more or whatever.
I can't.
I know.
It takes a lot of the spirit out. It really is overdoing it, I think. And I'm not comparing it to the old days, you know. No. It's this marketing stuff, like you said, from these companies trying to suck every penny out of the consumer.
Well, they're trying to make a buck, Raj.
I understand.
I don't know if you're aware, but the stock market is kind of tanking right now. We need to make some extra coin.
Well, guess where my money's not in?
Well, good for you.
Because
I wish mine wasn't. God, what a week.
I know. What is it, like 45% in the last month or so?
Roger, I have bragged many times over the years that the one really good investment I've made in my life was buying Apple stock.
Yeah.
Apple stock, about 3 weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago, and I needed to sell some, right? I'm like, I gotta sell some of this.
I gotcha.
We got some stuff to pay off.
Gotcha.
And I sold a little bit, but then I thought, you know what? I'm going to wait because they've got a quarterly report coming up.
Right.
I always blow those things through the water.
And you got to wait because it's Christmas.
And then it's going to shoot up. And then I'm going to sell it then. Now, this is like a month ago. I only had to wait a few days.
Okay.
I'm going to wait for that quarterly report, and then I'll sell.
Okay.
Quarterly report comes out. Had a good quarter. Had a great quarter. New records, all this stuff. Just like usual.
Mm-hmm.
Their guidance for the fourth quarter was flat.
Uh-oh.
It wasn't, hey, we're going to blow out from last year. It was, we're going to sell about the same amount as last year, which made us a lot of money. That was taken negatively, though.
No.
And so the stock started going down. And then all these other market forces, whatever, the stock has been going down. When I was hesitating to sell it, it was at $223 a share.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what it closed on Friday at?
100 and something.
150.
No, my God.
150.
That's horrible.
Oh, you're telling me.
I got to ask you a question because this is freaking me out.
Yeah.
Is there somebody behind you?
Oh, my God. No. You scared me, though.
No, I'm not kidding.
What are you saying?
I'm not kidding.
Roger,
stop
what?
It, Jesus.
What is happening?
Oh, Jess, you just scared the crap out of me. Oh, my God. What are you trying to do to me, Roger? Why are you doing that?
I didn't know she...
Oh, my God. Turn off your mic. I'm turning him off for a moment before he loses a lung on the air. Oh, my gosh. Are you okay? Yes. Let's go back for a minute and find out what the hell just happened here.
I'm not kidding.
What just happened here? I'm talking to Roger. He says, I'm not meaning to freak you out, but is there somebody behind you? Which
I
sort of freaks me out.
To God.
And so I turn around and I look.
Right.
And I'm not seeing anything. So I say, no. And then you say, no, I'm serious. Is there? And so I turn again, and as I turn, Jess says something in my head, which made me think.
And it said it in my, she said it
something
out the
there.
Air.
Yeah, I know.
Nice and loud.
So I hear that, and it just made me scream.
Oh, my goodness, my eyes.
Why do you think there's somebody? You're really freaking me out now, like you're seeing the ghost or something.
And you know I don't believe in this stuff. But while you were talking to me about your stock on camera one and two.
Right, okay.
There's a slightly different angle.
Yeah.
So on camera one, there's a little dark spot, and then I could see the light from the window through the shades.
Right, I see that.
And I swear to God, somebody came out, stepped out a little way from
the
black
dude,
spot.
That's freaking me
I'm
out.
I'm not
Stop
kidding.
It.
Moved out and then back. I can even see a little bit now. And then on the camera two, I could see something moving behind in the dark spot. There's no illumination.
I think that's my shadow.
Was that your shadow? Move again.
Are you sure it's not?
No, move the other way. No. It was not your shadow because you weren't moving. You were talking straight. You were standing straight.
Oh, God, I'm getting the chills.
I'm not kidding. I saw something move on camera one out from the shadow. That's why I thought maybe Jess was standing behind you or something.
That'd be great if Kevin Richter flew into town and he's like, I'm getting Matt back. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I'm not kidding. I didn't mean to
hobbling around
you.
Here on a bad knee I had surgery on. You're going to make me rip tendons.
You almost fell down.
I did. I literally did.
Just when you called out.
When Jess said that, I threw the...
I know.
Just like that.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. But it was not your show. I'm not. Whew. And I don't believe in this stuff. Honest, I don't. But you're talking to me, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing something come out of the corner. And I'm freaking out. I'm thinking, well, maybe Jess is back there with her Santa hat.
Well, for listeners who don't know or who don't watch it all on the stream, I keep everything pitch black in here.
Yeah.
I got used to it. Patty got me used to it in the old tower where the lights in here are pretty harsh, too, for the TV cameras.
Extremely.
So we always had the lights off when Patty would bring a lamp in, and I got used to doing it by lamplight. And then once we got to the new studio, these lights are really bright, and I have four monitors on right in front of me, and they light things up more than enough to read or do anything by, so I just keep it dark in here. It's overnight, yeah. We go with it. So I could see where there's shadows and stuff like that or whatever going on, but you really freaked me out.
I did not mean to. Honest to goodness, I did not mean to.
Oh, man.
It just, I'm sorry.
And that's our Halloween special a little bit early this year.
If you couldn't get enough pumpkin spice before.
Yeah. All of you that think Halloween gets ripped off, we're bringing it back for Christmas. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Texter says, now, of course, you have to come out of this break with the theme song from Nightmare Before Christmas.
There you go.
We weren't quick enough for that. But as we're in break,
yeah.
I have the news channels up so I can see information, whatever.
Uh-huh.
What do you think a commercial was playing for on CNN? A special they have coming up on the curious case of the killer clown about John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, my God.
So I got to see that now.
Today or yesterday, he was sentenced, I think. I think it was yesterday that was the anniversary, 35 years?
Crazy. Hey, Bulls fans, enter your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls night experience at chicagotribune.com/bullsquiz. That's courtesy of your Chicago Tribune. Reminder, coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, we'll probably do it. Let's do it right after the 3:30 news. We'll give away a pair of tickets to the Winter Classic. To the Winter Classic!
Wow.
You can go see the Hawks and the Bruins play at Notre Dame Stadium. That is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Oh, yeah.
They might never do that again.
No.
So your chance to win Hawks-Bruins tickets after the 3:30 news, you're going to have to pick them up here at the station. So make sure you're able to do that on the 27th or 28th, and make sure you're able to go to that game because that is worth seeing. All right, 3:02 in the morning. Let's do this. Hear the sounds that matter, the top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. That's weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's your news with Roger Badish.
Our finest gifts we bring, ba-ra-ba-bum-bum, ra-ba-bum-bum, ra-ba-bum-bum.
312-981-7200, 3:10 in the morning. Matt Bubala with you here on 720 WGN. Jess and Roger are battling for rights to play the bumps as we come back from the breaks here.
I got too many buttons at times, sir. Too many. I don't know how you guys do it.
So, you were mentioning the weather just now.
Yeah.
Christmas Day. Christmas Eve. Day. Travel for travelers.
Yeah.
Are we expecting any issues here in the Chicagoland area?
Not that I know of. Let me double check the WGN extended forecast for you. Let me see here.
Was that Bowie and Bing Crosby? I didn't think that was. Jess is working with Aubrey. They're trying to get a guest on.
Again, more stuff. All right, so here's your extended forecast for Christmas Day. A slight chance of snow before 10 in the morning, then a slight chance of rain and snow between 10 and 11. Then a slight chance of rain after 11, getting up to 37. So it's going to be a slushy, mostly wet, no accumulation kind of day. Wednesday, again, pretty much the same thing, getting up to 38.
But pretty much the white Christmas is out.
Yeah.
We're not having that.
Yeah. Nah, rain all the way through to Friday. Yeah. It's going to be a rainy week.
And for those of you with drives to make on Christmas Day, you might have some weather to contend with. A little bit of rain.
Not too bad, but yeah, the roads will be slick.
So my mom and my aunt and my brother were going to drive out on Christmas morning.
Okay.
My mom is 75, and she's getting to an age where she doesn't love a lot of conditions for driving.
Right. Totally understand.
She likes sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
She likes no snow, no rain, things like that. So for the last two Christmases, she hasn't made it out.
Oh.
And so this year she's like, looks good, looks good, looks good. And then I went and met her for lunch this week because I had to get my Marushak sausage for the Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
They make that in Northwest Indiana. So I go out there to pick it up from mom and we had lunch. And she was saying, I'm not sure now. Now it's looking like there might be rain, there might be this, might be that. We're already planning on eating our Christmas dinner at 1:30 so that mom can get back on the road by 3 and drive home before it gets dark. She said she had to drive one night last week in the dark and was like freaked out by it.
Bridget's the same way. She has
water
trouble
and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hoping mom and Aunt Mary and Mike are going to make it to the house for Christmas, but I'm not sure what's going to happen. And we'd go pick them up and bring them and have them stay overnight. Aunt Mary doesn't like staying overnight.
She
likes to be in her place, which I get.
Yeah.
I understand it.
Sure.
So
we got that. It'll be fine. Traffic usually is light on Christmas
Day. Will be light. It's more just the nervousness about sleet and rain and, what are you facing? Yeah. Is it going to get dark? All that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's starting to get light.
It is. This is the winter solstice, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're efforting our friends at Stonehenge to see if we could chat with them, trying to figure out how to dial to England without paying $1 million for it right now is what we're doing. Hopefully, we'll talk to them about Stonehenge because they had a big event out there today.
Yeah.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Government's still shut down. Ticker says 4 hours and 13 minutes now.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And 30 seconds.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, I saw a graphic. 420,000 government workers will work without pay. 310,000 federal workers will not work.
And they will not get paid back.
And
getting furloughed.
Yeah, they're furloughed.
The ones that aren't working aren't going to get paid for this time. They're just getting some extended unpaid leave.
Right.
And a tough position to be in, too. I mean, if this goes for any real amount of time, either way, if they say, no, keep working, we'll pay you later, how long can most Americans afford to do that? Let's face it, most of us have what? The average is like $20,000 in credit card debt and, we're up to our ears in debt.
Mm-hmm.
So for the average worker, especially a government employee, say they're making $50,000 to $75,000 a year, who's got a mortgage, who's got all these other things, if this dragged on for, say, 2 months,
I bet
there'd be real problems.
Right. I think most people only have about a month's worth of ready cash in order to take care of bills and whatever. And that's nowhere. I think that's most of the country. Even though all the experts say you should have 6 months' worth.
Well, we should, right?
Right.
But we don't.
But we don't. Yeah, not even close.
It's not easy to have that.
No.
Not easy to have that. No. And with the stock market tumbling,
You're there.
Makes it even
worse. You know,
worse.
Even if you had some savings in 401k, you're looking at that thinking, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Now my retirement's not looking as good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. I think it'll go pretty quick and they'll get this resolved. There won't be funding for a wall, but I think they'll get it resolved. And then we'll see where things go from there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Chris Gebhardt will join us after 4:30 in the morning from NASA spaceflight.com.
You know what I read? No. The flights of the Voyagers, of how far they have gone.
These are the ones that have left our solar system?
Yes. Well, not... they haven't left the solar system.
Are you sure? Something just left the solar system recently.
No, from the way I read it, because that's what I thought too. And then I started reading it. It's like, well, they left this part of the solar system. Now they're kind of in the part that we're not quite sure of, but it's still part of our solar system. I mean, all right. I'm getting it mixed up. Yes, they passed the solar system, but they're still in our galaxy.
Oh, okay.
Right. That's where I got mixed up. So they're still in the solar system, but they're past the point of where we have really been able to study, but yet they're still in our galaxy. The Hubble telescope, of course, has allowed us to see past our galaxy, but we really, that's not what the Voyagers are meant to do. It's measuring something else that the Hubble isn't able to measure.
Launched just 16 days apart, Voyager 1 and 2 were designed to take advantage of a rare alignment of the outer planets that only occurs once every 176 years. Their trajectory took them by the outer planets, where they captured never-before-seen images. They were also able to steal a little momentum from Jupiter and Saturn that helped send them on a path toward interstellar space. This gravity assist gave the spacecraft a velocity boost without expending any fuel. Though both spacecraft were destined for interstellar space, they followed slightly different trajectories. Voyager 1 followed a path that enabled it to fly by Jupiter in 1979, discovering the gas giant's rings. It continued for a 1980 close encounter with Saturn's moon Titan before gravity assist from Saturn hurled it above the plane of the solar system and out toward interstellar space. After Voyager 2 visited Jupiter in 1979 and Saturn in 1981, it continued onto encounter Uranus in 1986, where it obtained another assist. Its last planetary visit before heading out of the solar system was Neptune in 1989, where the gas giant's gravity sent the probe in a southward direction toward interstellar space. Since the end of its prime mission at Neptune, Voyager 2 has been using its onboard instruments to continue sensing the environment around it, communicating data back to scientists on Earth. It was this data that scientists used to determine Voyager 2 had entered interstellar space. Interstellar space, the region between the stars, is beyond the influence of the solar wind, charged particles emanating from the sun, and before the influence of the stellar wind of another star. One hint that Voyager 2 was nearing interstellar space came in late August when the Cosmic Ray Subsystem, an instrument that measures cosmic rays coming from the sun and galactic cosmic rays coming from outside our solar system, measured an increase in galactic cosmic rays hitting the spacecraft. Then on November 5th, the instrument detected a sharp decrease in high-energy particles from the sun. That downward trend continued over the following weeks.
Yep, that's the article I read.
It's crazy that from the 70s, these things are still going strong.
Yeah, and still feeding information back.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I can't even get good reception on my TV from a local channel, and these guys are sending... you know, data back from light years away with these rocks flying through the air. I mean, come on.
Though the spacecraft have left the heliosphere, Voyager 1 and 2 have not yet left the solar system.
There you go.
And won't be leaving anytime soon. The boundary of the solar system is considered to be beyond the outer edge of the Oort cloud, a collection of small objects that are still under the influence of the sun's gravity. The width of the Oort cloud is not known precisely, but it is estimated to begin at about 1,000 astronomical units from the sun and extend to about 100,000 astronomical units. One astronomical unit is the distance from the sun to the Earth. It will take about 300 years for Voyager 2 to reach the inner edge of the Oort cloud and possibly 30,000 years to fly behind it. By that time, both Voyager spacecraft will be completely out of their hydrazine fuel
used to point them toward Earth to send and receive data, and their power sources will have decayed beyond their usable lifetime.
Oh, man.
No word cloud for those guys.
I wanted to wait around for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we could cryogenically freeze you and bring you back and see what happens.
Please.
How many people do you think? Do you think that Walt Disney is really, like, frozen somewhere?
No.
But there are people who are frozen, right?
I would imagine. But, I mean, what did they say? Who was the baseball player that his head was supposed to have
been frozen? Ted Williams,
Ted
right?
Ted Williams' head was frozen. I don't know.
I wonder if they're really working hard on that technology. You know, they get the money to freeze them with the promise of, and then when it's ready, we'll bring you back. But when you paid the money for the freezing, did they say, and we're working on it? Or did they say, somebody else will figure that out? We're just going to keep you frozen. We're going to concentrate on this one task because you don't want us to screw this up. We'll keep you frozen.
Right.
Somebody else will figure the rest out, and then we'll hook you up.
So here's my problem with that. If I'm going to a company that promises they'll freeze me and I can come back later, are the employees of that company and the owners of that company also going to be frozen? Are they using their own product? Do they feel confident enough about their own product?
That's a really great question.
Because if they're not going to, I ain't going to either.
Yeah, if they're not saying, yeah, we're in, then,
right.
Boy, you don't believe much in it, do you? Or maybe they're like, nope, I think this is enough.
No, I lived my life,
and I don't need to come back.
No, yes, they do.
Why?
Because I'm not going to pay money if they're not going to do it.
Well, maybe they just tell you they're doing it.
Look, I used to sell insurance. I bought insurance for myself. Well, and so, you know, why not you?
What I never understood about the freezing thing was I would think you would need to do that before you actually died. You know what I mean? Like, not just, hey, once I die, freeze me. Because it's like, well, you already died.
Right.
I almost feel like they need to stop, like hit the pause button. Like, yeah, I'm still alive. Just put me on pause, freeze me up. And then, you know, de-thaw me and rejigger me once,
put you in
once things are ready.
Artificial stasis?
Yeah. Okay. You know, a state of suspended animation, right?
What was that movie, the Sylvester Stallone?
The Empire Strikes Back. They put Han Solo in the carbonite.
Well, that, yes. But then there was the one, the prison picture. It was Sylvester Stallone and...
Victory? Is this the one where they're the soccer team and they break out? That was a good one.
Soccer team. This is where he's a cop, but he gets in trouble, and he's quick frozen. And this was a cryogenic prison. And there was another bad guy who was pre-programmed before they froze him. What's her name is in it? Oh, goodness gracious. I'll look for it here. And she keeps, she's like, she loves the old, Demolition Man.
Oh, I never saw that.
Oh, yeah. So Demolition Man is with, where are we here? Come here.
Is it Bruce Willis in that one?
No.
Or Wesley
Sandra
Snipes?
Bullock. Sandra Bullock, okay. Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes.
Okay.
And it is where he is a cop going after Wesley Snipes' character, who is like a maniac, and he captures him, and they quick freeze him in this cryogenic prison. And it's like you curl up in the bottom of this little Petri dish, and they start pouring this special liquid in, which apparently goes into your lungs or whatever, and then they throw the freezing agent, like a little tablet into it, and poof, quick froze.
Okay. And why did they do that?
Because the prison space, and because you would be brought back later from your sentence.
So you served your sentence while frozen?
You would. And then they'd unfreeze you. They would bring you before a hearing board, see if you have repented or learned your lesson, because they're programming you while you're...
They're doing
stuff to your brain to try to, you know, correct your bad behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they quick freeze Stallone, and suddenly he comes back. He's still a cop, but now all of a sudden he knows how to knit.
Wait, what?
He knows how to, like, knit sweaters.
Wesley Snipes?
No. Wesley Snipes has been programmed to be able to break into computers and cause havoc.
Why does Sylvester Stallone get
frozen?
Because he overstepped his boundaries as a police officer. And like some children died in as he was trying to get Wesley Snipes, who blew up buildings and people and stuff.
So they froze him too?
Yeah.
And then they both come back out at the same time. He's got to chase him again?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you see that they made that, I think it's 20th Century Fox released a Christmas trailer for Die Hard to prove once and for all?
Yes,
because there's always
saw
a big
that.
Argument every yes. year about whether that's a Christmas movie.
Hilarious.
312.
Did you see the Home Alone?
The commercial, the Google commercial? I did watch that. I thought it's actually pretty well done.
Yeah.
So Macaulay Culkin as an adult Kevin left Home Alone again.
Yeah.
But he's using his Google assistant
to help him out.
To be Home Alone and to fend off would be.
Yeah,
robbers.
He does stuff like Google, put aftershave lotion on the shopping list.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. News coming up, 720 WGN. All right, we're going to do the news. Then we're going to tell you how you can win a pair of tickets to the Winter Classic, Hawks against the Bruins at Notre Dame Stadium. Keep listening after the news. We'll tell you how you can win them right now, 3:31 in the morning. Let's check the headlines with Roger Badish. Matt Bobala with you here, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're here until 5 a.m. Orion Samuelson then has your morning show. You were talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg during your newscast a couple of times. I did do that as we headed into the news, Jess. Yeah. I know you had said that erroneously it was reported she had voted from the hospital.
Right.
Can they do that? I wonder like what the rules are for that.
I'm not sure.
But you said it was corrected. She voted before she headed to the hospital.
Yeah, her office had clarified it, that she did vote on that measure prior to going to the hospital.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, kind of a badass, don't you think?
Did you see the
documentary? I mean, she really is. I have not seen the documentary yet.
Oh, it's great. And a movie.
Is coming out Christmas Day, I think.
Yes,
right?
About her early career where she fought and won for the women's movement.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where she enters, I think it's Harvard Law School or Yale Law School, and all these women that are in there, and I don't know if it's the first time they're allowing women or what, but the guy has them all and says, okay, let's have you all introduce yourselves and tell us why you should be here taking the position that could have been here for a man.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, I want to learn better what my husband does, which I'm assuming she was being smart alecky at the time. That's the way they played, at least in the trailer.
Yeah.
So that looks like it could be an interesting
watch the documentary first and then see the movie.
Which is called RBG?
Yeah.
I think.
The Notorious RBG.
The Notorious RBG?
Yep.
Is that on
Netflix?
It's
on Prime.
Or Prime?
Yeah.
All right. So you're this big Prime user.
Yeah. Well.
No,
yeah.
You are. You,
all right.
You watch a lot of your stuff on Prime.
Yeah.
There was a show on Prime, I think I told you about it, called Homecoming with Julia Roberts.
Okay.
Did you watch it?
No,
you did
I have not.
Nope. I really want you to see that because I want to see
what you think. I got to, you know what, send me a text with your list of shows that I have to watch. Because when I go home, I sleep and my brain, like, does a dump. You know what I'm saying?
Just dump it all out?
Yeah. It takes,
just clear out that inbox?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've just deleted all, you know, web pages that I visited. It's just all gone. The information is just gone.
So last Saturday, I filled in for John on his Saturday morning show for John Williams.
Right.
And I spoke with Phil Rogers, who used to write for the Chicago Tribune, and he writes for Forbes now. He appears on MLB Network.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Hall of Fame baseball writer, longtime national baseball writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
And now he was writing recently for MLB Network. Now he's writing a lot of pieces for Forbes, and he appears on the MLB Network TV channel. And so we talked about the White Sox, and as I readily admitted, I'm a big Cubs fan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up a Sox fan, but we talked for half an hour about the possibility that Manny Machado and or Bryce Harper could actually sign with the White Sox.
And now,
and he was making an argument that because you think of Jerry Reinsdorf. Jerry Reinsdorf is not a huge throw money around guy.
No.
The White Sox, when the team is not good, have, you know, the Cubs are able to go through that rebuild because they've got Wrigley Field and because they're able to,
you know, get everybody to still come at least in decent numbers, even when they're bottoming out because of the atmosphere.
Right.
For
the tradition,
for guaranteed rate, it's yeah. tougher. I mean, yeah. Sox fans are more fickle. If the team's not playing well, they're not coming to the park.
Yeah.
So it's a much tougher proposition for the White Sox to go through that type of rebuild. So when the idea that they would spend this kind of money for a Manny Machado or a Bryce
right.
Harper
mm-hmm.
seems crazy, right? But Phil was saying, hey, the Sox only have $22 million in guaranteed payroll after next year. They could sign both of these guys still, and with all the young players, young talent they have coming
sure,
up,
sure.
they could put together a really good team with both of those guys for about $160 million, only put them in the middle of the pack for payroll in baseball.
Okay.
I mean, that's actually possible. And he was saying that when the Cubs are going to opt out of the TV network, the NBC Sports, you know, the Cubs are 25% of that. The Hawks and the Bulls are each 25%.
Yeah, but the Cubs are working on their own network.
Right, and the Sox. So the Cubs yeah. are going to opt out of that.
Right.
So he was saying, you know, the Hawks and the Bulls, both, you know, at somewhat of a downtime, Sox in a rebuild, they need some excitement so
sure.
they can have their own channel and have viewership.
Right.
So it all started making, like, business sense. I'm thinking, wow, there's actually a possibility this will actually happen, that both of these guys
yeah.
might actually sign with the White Sox. But then on Friday,
yep.
the Dodgers hit a huge, interesting trade. They get rid of, so first of all, Manny Machado, who is with the Dodgers, but he's a free agent, so he's gone.
Right.
The Dodgers traded Yasiel Puig,
right.
superstar out right fielder for them, outfielder Matt Kemp, left-handed pitcher Alex Wood, and infielder Kyle Farmer, and cash to the Reds for Homer Bailey, who they already released.
Right.
And some prospects. Mm-hmm. And not even
to
their best
prospect. It
says the Reds are sending out their number 7 and number 20 prospects.
But in...
That's not that... That's their number 7 prospect.
I understand. But the part I read was that those two prospects are thought of more highly outside of that team. That in general, of the prospects available, those two are the higher rated.
Maybe.
So
maybe, but
yeah.
still,
and
they're not like getting back.
So get to the bottom line here.
Bottom line is they just cleared up a bunch of salary space.
Tons of money.
To try to land Bryce Harper.
Exactly.
And that's the guess, is that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, there's some writing in this piece I'm reading from ESPN.com that, you know, maybe they won't do it, though, because the Dodgers have been paying luxury tax for a few years, haven't won the World Series, want to get back under the luxury tax. Bryce Harper would put them back over it. And the interesting thing about the salary tax, so $206 million is the salary tax for next year. After you hit $206 million, you have to start paying a luxury tax. It says here, it's unclear where the Dodgers stand now in relation to next year's luxury tax threshold. They're definitely under it. Roster Resource projects their 2019 payroll at $197.5 million. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports puts it much lower at $184.4 million. Either way, however, the Dodgers can't sign Harper to a contract of 30-plus per year and avoid the tax. If they want him, they'll have to either further trim down the payroll or not worry about avoiding the tax. The tax is an incremental problem. If you exceed the tax threshold by more than $20 million, so you pay a tax if you go over the $206 million, but if you exceed it by more than $20 million, you pay more taxes, as well as a draft penalty. Their top pick moves down. Wait a minute. Dodgers will be subject to a surtax if they exceed the threshold by more than $20 million. Okay. As well as more taxes and a draft penalty if they go more than $40 million over. So if you go more than $40 million over the $206 million, not only are you paying a bunch of penalties and taxes, but your top draft pick drops 10 spots. And that's more of a concern, I think, to some of these teams than the money. The Yankees got nothing but money. They're going to spend it. And I don't understand how the Cubs have been on the sidelines for any of this, saying, oh, we don't have money, we don't have this or that. The Cubs have nothing but money. They're making nothing but money. Now, I could understand Theo saying we're not losing draft picks because if we want to have sustained success, which is their big phrase, you can't have your draft pick drop in 10 spots. You have to keep replenishing the farm system with draft. And losing 10 spots is not a good idea for them. I know they want to win now, and they should.
but they should be willing to go over the luxury tax up until the point where that becomes a problem. Now, for the Cubs, they've got a glut of fielders, and they've got a lot of money on the books. The Jason Hayward contract is a tough one. They'd have to make a trade like the Dodgers did to dump salary and probably pay some of it with them. They'd probably have to send Jason Hayward and somebody like Ian Happ to another team and some money to help pay down the contract. But it's not like they couldn't do that. And if it was to get a Bryce Harper, why wouldn't they? But now it looks like the Dodgers just cleared up a bunch of the space. Very likely the Dodgers, I can't imagine they're going to just say, no, we're saving money. We got rid of these superstars. You know, they re-signed Clayton Kershaw to a good deal. It doesn't make any sense that they wouldn't be trying to go for it and trying to sign Bryce Harper. Rumor is they don't love Manny Machado. That was a bad experience there, so they're going to let him go. So maybe that's who ends up with the White Sox. I think the feeling is Machado will sign somewhere before Bryce Harper signs anything. Scott Boras, Harper's agent, likes to wait, likes to let the market set itself before he gets involved. 312-981-7200, Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You know what, Jess? I said one thing, but I'm going to tell you another. My favorite Blackhawk right now is still Jonathan Toews, the captain. So we'll do the 19th caller in honor of our captain, oh, captain. The 19th caller, 312-981-7200. You will get a pair of tickets to the Winter Classic. All you got to do is be able to come pick them up on Thursday next week or Friday next week, the 27th or 28th. Jess will tell you all about that off the air. But here we go, 312-981-7200, the 19th caller in honor of Captain Sirius, Jonathan Toews, will win the tickets. Today, 312-981-7200 is the number. We told you that if you were the 19th caller, you would win tickets to go see the Blackhawks play at the Winter Classic in Notre Dame. Let's take a couple of these on the air. WGN Radio, what's your name?
Jody Mack. Mm-hmm.
Jody Mack, I'm sorry. You are caller number, let me see here. You are caller number 19. Jody, you're caller number 19.
Yay! Woohoo!
Can you go to the Winter Classic in South Bend, Indiana?
I can, yes, I can.
How awesome is that? Have you ever been to a Winter Classic?
I have not, and I want to be.
Have you gone to a Hawks game before?
I have, of course.
Are you a big Hawks fan?
Yes, I am.
Who is your favorite Chicago Blackhawk?
Poor Crawford. I feel so badly for him.
Yeah, we all do. That hit on the head the other night did not look good. That's for sure.
That is not good. We need him back.
We do need him back. Although our Blackhawks have won 3 straight. They're having their best stretch of the season.
I know. Finally, it's about time. It's been a long season.
I hear you. All right. So you're going to get all geared up. You're going to get suited up. You're going to make the trek out to South Bend, Indiana. Have you been to Notre Dame Stadium before?
For a football game.
Oh, excellent. All right, Jody. So there you go. So you've seen a football game. Now, for the first time ever, you'll see a hockey game in Notre Dame Stadium.
Yeah. All right.
Who are you going to take with you?
Probably my son in college. Oh. He'd like that.
Yeah, I bet he would. Where does he go to school?
TCU.
Oh, wow. So is he already home for the holidays?
He is. What a great thing to put in a stocking.
Yeah, no kidding. Is he awake right now? Does he know that you just won this?
Of course not, no.
Well, I don't know. He's
a
college kid.
I don't know if he's even home at this point.
Oh, I was going to say, he's still at the bars, probably. I don't know where he is.
Yes, exactly.
He is enjoying winter break. Well, good for him. Well, Jody, you hold on. Jess has got to get all your information, figure out how you can get down here and pick these up. You have a wonderful, wonderful time. And then the weekend after, are you normally up at this time in the morning? Why are you listening to us? Were you coming home from work or what's going on?
Just because I want to listen to you.
Oh, no. Jody, you're the best. All right, well, then after you go to the game, call us the next weekend and tell us how it was, okay?
You got it. Thank you, Jody, so much.
You bet. You hold on. Jess will take care of you. That's how we do it. Pair of tickets to the Winter Classic for Jody Mack. Jess, you talk to Jody and get all of her information so she can get those tickets. And I will remind you again, of course, visit the Blackhawks Hockey House that's now open at 333 North Michigan Avenue. That's just south of the Blackhawks store. It's filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Winter Classic merchandise, and much more. And there's the NHL Winter Classic Park. That's a free fan festival in Millennium Park. You can enjoy games, food and drink, meet and get autographs from the Hawks. That's from December 29th through the 31st. Oh, by the way, Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Have you ever gone to any of the Winter Classics, Raj?
No, I've watched a couple. Well, the only ones the Hawks have been in.
Yeah.
Anyone else, I don't care.
I watch them, and I've seen the one. You know, I would have loved to have gone to Wrigley to see that. I think that would have been
cool. Oh, yeah. Classic.
So we've had one at Wrigley. We've had one at Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Hawks are traveling out to South Bend.
Yeah. I've never been to Notre Dame. Driven past the exit to it, but never been to Notre Dame.
I've never been to a football game at Notre Dame, but I went to Mount Carmel High School, and we did something your senior year called a Kairos retreat, which is like a Christian retreat, Christian Catholic retreat.
All right.
Dealio. And so we had our retreat at Notre Dame at the college.
Oh, nice.
And it was wonderful. And part of our downtime, we walk around the campus. We got to walk into the stadium. We actually got to go down and walk around on the field.
Ooh.
And that was really cool, and especially because I was there with a bunch of Mount Carmel football players, and they were like in love with the idea of doing that. That was like the greatest thing in the world to them.
Now, did the senior group for that event go to Notre Dame every year for the event?
I think we did back in the day. Yeah. I don't remember, you know, I don't know now if they still get to do that or not.
Because I was thinking maybe it was like a recruiting kind of agreement.
I don't think so. No. I don't think Notre Dame needs a recruit like that.
Well, I don't know.
I think people are, you know, knocking down the doors to get in there.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. It was probably just a Christian Catholic, whatever type thing that made that happen. Hey, Jess, don't forget to get on the line with Jody Mack and get all of her information so we don't lose her. Okay. All right. So it looks like we have finally hooked up with our friend, one of the directors out at Stonehenge to talk about the winter solstice.
Nice.
Unfortunately, we have to quick. I'm sorry, Kate Davies, who is on the phone. We got to do the news real quick because we're pressed up against the wall. But then we're going to chat with you. Thank you so much for your patience with us. We'll do this. Then we'll do that. And we'll take your calls, 312-981-7200. Especially if you have a question about Stonehenge, the history of the place, or getting there, or anything about it. Roger and I have both been there. We'll talk to Kate about that. But it is one of the wonders of the world. There's no doubt about it. It is mystifying and magnificent. And yet, not over, you know, it's not going to the Grand Canyon. It's not going to see a pyramid. You pull out into the field and there's these rocks and you're like, all right, this is it. And then you walk around and you think about it. You're like, oh my God, how did this get here? How did they do this? This is crazy. We'll talk about that after this. Hear the sounds that matter. The top five at five from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here's your news with Roger Badish.
Hey, hello to friends you know. And
Matt Bubala will here with you, 720 WGN. It's 4:06 a.m. here, which means it's 10:06 a.m. in England. And our friend Kate Davies is on the phone right now, I think live from Stonehenge. Good morning, Kate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good morning. How are you?
We're great. Thank you so much for being with us. We're getting a lot of echo, so it's a little tough to talk here. But hold on one second. Let me try to redo this again and see if we can get this hooked up better. Hold on one second. Kate, I'm sorry. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry about that. Okay, so Kate Davies is one of the directors at English Heritage. And are you at Stonehenge actually this morning?
Yes, I am indeed. I've been stood in front of the monument all morning watching the sunrise.
And I imagine, I don't know if you know, I don't know much about whether Groundhog's Day is an international thing. Here in the States, the first Tuesday, I think, of February every year, we have what's called Groundhog's Day. And it's famous in a state called Pennsylvania where this groundhog, they gather around, have TV cameras, and when the groundhog shows itself, if it sees its shadow, it means we're going to have six more weeks of winter. And if it doesn't, it means winter comes sooner. I imagine at Stonehenge, when you guys do this every year, you're praying that it's actually sunny out. So this is a bit of a spectacle instead of a cloudy day where it doesn't make much of a difference. Did you get a good day today?
That's exactly the case. We stood there this morning and it was very cloudy, so we didn't think we were going to see a sunrise. We did see the sun, but it wasn't a crystal clear sun because it was blocked by some clouds. So we have the exact feeling of those people who participate in your Groundhog Day.
And how many people come to Stonehenge for an event like the winter solstice?
So we had around 5,000 people this morning who all got out of bed really early. They arrived on site by around 7 a.m. and the sun rose at just gone 8 a.m. this morning.
Wow, 5,000 people. And I've been to Stonehenge before. It's a huge open area, but the monument itself is not that huge of an area. So for 5,000 people to crowd around, that has to be pretty crowded, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is pretty crowded. You're right. The monument itself is really big, but when you get lots of people up close to it, it's quite a dense space. And we had people from, you know, all ages, all walks of life. We had lots of people from the Druid and Pagan community who, you know, this is a special time of year for them in particular, all gathered together, all facing the sunrise with their phones, taking pictures and enjoying themselves.
Tell me a little bit for people who don't know about Stonehenge itself, because we'll hear a story once or twice a year, it seems, for a new discovery or a new theory about Stonehenge, about how it got there, about, you know, the different mythologies of it. What is the basic facts that we know about Stonehenge and how it came to be?
Okay, so over 5,000 years ago, Stonehenge started. And henge is actually the word used for a bank and ditch. So the ditch around the stones came first, and then the stones started to be built around 4,500 years ago. And there are two different types of stones. There's the blue stone, which people say sort of glows blue in certain lights, and then there's the large sarsen stones. The large ones came from around 20 k's away from where we were at Stonehenge, whereas the blue stone came more like 200 k's away. And so we don't actually know how the stones got there, but we think they would have been sort of dragged, and they would have maybe come on a river as well as across the ground. And we believe that, you know, it would have been a temple of some sort. We don't think people lived at Stonehenge. We think they lived around the area. But we think they would have gathered here at Stonehenge. And what we do know is that it was built on the solstice alignment. So its access were intentionally designed so that when the sun rose at the summer and sets in the winter solstice, that the light from the sun shines through the stone. So it was intentionally designed to mark this occasion in the year.
So pretty amazing, because you think it's about 4,500 years old. How long do you think it's been since the stones were set in place?
Yeah, so the stones started to be built around 4,500 years ago. So so they are that old. And so we think that people have gathered for thousands of years to mark the turning of the seasons. And we think that the people who built Stonehenge, they were probably agricultural people farming the land. So the turning of the seasons would have been really important to them, particularly in the winter, actually, where you mark the longer days and the shorter nights and the move towards springtime, where obviously the harvests and the you know, the spring would come, and so would the food. So that's why we think they may have gathered. But of course, it's so long ago that we don't actually know. This is what we believe to be true.
So the best guess is sort of like a monument to give thanks for good harvest, something like that. Sort of a an altar of sorts to agriculture.
Potentially, yes. They definitely wanted to mark the occasion of the winter and summer solstice. They definitely wanted to mark the changing of the seasons. So that's what we think would have happened here.
Is Stonehenge set up to be a sundial sort of in any other way, or is it specifically set up to mark the solstices only?
It's specifically to mark the solstices only.
It's so fascinating, not only that they would, as you mentioned, the stones came from very far away, and we truly have no idea, I mean, just trying to think about that long ago, what the world would have even been like, what technology they might have even had, A. B, how would they know that there were stones, you know, so far away? Because we're talking about across the sea somewhat into Wales, right?
Yes, you are. You're correct. I think sometimes you think that people maybe weren't sophisticated because they didn't have the technology that we had now. But actually, these people were engineers. They were mathematicians. In order to create such a precise structure, such an architecturally sophisticated structure, with the tools that they had, it's quite an incredible feat. And I think that is the wonder of Stonehenge. That's what makes it so iconic, and it attracts people from all around the world to come and see it, because it's this feature of they were a determined people. They must have worked as a big community to move those stones. It must have been a big communal activity. So it's quite incredible to have an insight into a world 5,000 years ago that we don't know much about. But this is a sort of, you know, what is remaining of their civilization and what was important to these people.
So we don't know exactly how the stones got there. Do we know how they got them in place? Have you been able to figure out? Because there's these large standing stones and then stones across the top, which when you're looking at them, you're just thinking, all right, without a some sort of mechanical contraption to lift something up, how would they have pulled that off? Have you been able to figure out at all how the stones got across the tops?
There's always lots of different experimental archaeology to have a go to see how they would have done it. And quite recently, English Heritage, who looks after Stonehenge, did moving and raising a stone where we tried to move a 4-ton stone, and then we tried to erect it like the builders of Stonehenge would have. And we needed a huge team of people. We used wooden rollers to move it and get some movement through the stone. We used ropes, and we did get it to stand. We didn't get it to stand as solid and as precise and as straight as the builders of Stonehenge managed. We didn't get to put a stone on top of a standing stone. We haven't got that far yet. But we think it was they used a system of using wooden sleepers or wooden sledge to move it, and maybe ropes and a huge mass of people to pull it up. And they obviously hand kind of carved the stones to create joints. You can see evidence at Stonehenge of a stone with almost a pimple on the top, is what I call it, so that it can slot a stone on top of it. We don't know if they had any machinery or cranes. It's highly unlikely. It would have been through working together with the tools that they did have.
Is it possible at all that the ground was much higher then, that these were almost dropped into like holes that they had dug, and it wasn't as high back when they built it?
Well, anything is possible, but we don't think so.
It's fascinating. And I know that I've read articles about you guys doing x-rays of the land around and looking at what's underneath the land. And there's a lot more than just Stonehenge in the area. Stonehenge is what is really visible to us. But isn't there a lot underground that we're not as well aware of?
There's so much underground. You're absolutely correct. So Stonehenge is actually part of a really big World Heritage Site. And in that World Heritage Site, there are hundreds of scheduled monuments and features in the landscape. So there's lots of buried archaeology. There's lots of burial mounds. Stonehenge is important within its landscape because it's connected to all these different features that you don't necessarily see when you're stood looking at the stones. But when you look away from the stones and you look out, there are a huge number of features in the landscape. And we think that, their connectivity with Stonehenge is actually really important. We think some of the burial mounds might mean that people, important people may have been buried and maybe, have a view to the stones, or they are looked onto from the stones. So there's clearly a relationship between Stonehenge and the landscape in which it sits. And there are so many hidden stories under the ground that we continue to explore and discover all the time. And that's why, you mentioned that you often hear stories every now and then about Stonehenge, because there's so much still to discover out there.
And with the burial mounds, and there are a number of them, I believe, out there, what do you do to research those? I imagine you don't want to disturb burial mounds as much as possible. Are you waiting for technology to get better to be able to find out what's really under there without digging in? Or do you dig once in a while? Have there been archaeological expeditions into some of the burial mounds?
Well, there's a variety of kind of methods and techniques with how that is approached. Like you said, we try not to disturb things if it's at all possible, but we often work with research organizations and universities if they've got projects and funding, where we try to explore. Anything that doesn't create too much intervention is obviously welcomed, and advances in technology and laser surveys have been very, very useful to find out what's under the ground. But obviously digging does give you an opportunity to really thoroughly explore things.
Is there much known about the people that were buried there? Were they just the people that lived in the area, just agricultural people? Was there any sort of royalty or a dynasty or anything like that?
Well, we have no written records, so it's impossible for us to know who the people were and what their role is in society. But some of the things that you find can give you an indication. So in some graves, there's actually been some gold found, and that's dated slightly later than when Stonehenge started. But so those types of things give you clues on that person. You know, they may have been, you know, a chieftain of society, or maybe in a position of authority or affluence because they were buried with quite precious things. So there's all sorts of clues that might lead you to you know, draw conclusions on the people who have been buried in the area. And there's all sorts of things like carbon dating to give you an idea about, you know, where the people may have come from, so the minerals that they found in their bones. So there's all sorts of science and techniques out there that help to kind of give you clues and build a picture of those people. But it's obviously for us to draw the conclusions from everything that we find.
How recent is it that English Heritage started protecting a site like Stonehenge? You know, we see that the stones are not as perfect as they probably once were. Was that just erosion? Was that somebody else just owned the land that people would, you know, I imagine for hundreds of years, people just gathered there and it wasn't really governed by anything. How long have you been overseeing the site?
Well, interestingly, English Heritage has just been celebrating 100 years since Stonehenge was gifted to the nation. So 100 years ago, Stonehenge was in private ownership. And a local man called Cecil Chubb and his wife Mary, he acquired the stones at an auction just after the First World War, when the person who owned Stonehenge had wanted to sell it. And so Cecil bought it at an auction and decided that actually this monument was so important to England and our history that he wanted to give it to the people. And so Cecil gifted it to the nation, and English Heritage looks after lots of England's important heritage properties and monuments. And so English Heritage, we weren't called that 100 years ago, but we've been looking after it and caring for it and conserving it for 100 years. And back when it was given to the nation, it was actually in a bit of a state, and its future was by no means certain. Some of the stones had actually fallen over, and it was very unstable. And so immediately we took action, and a program of care started where we made sure that the stones were in a better condition, and we monitor and watch that every single day now as a result.
Is there some concern that, I mean, eventually, because they're out in the elements, that the stones will wear away more, that they will become unstable? Is this not a monument that will live forever?
Well, we do everything we can to make sure that it will live forever, you know, and that's why, you know, people getting up close to the stones is a very rare occasion. It only happens a couple of times of the year, and that's one of the ways that we make sure that we limit erosion and we limit damage to the stones. You know, they're in a very good state, and, you know, we hope that they will be there for future generations to enjoy. That is the purpose of English Heritage, and we take that very seriously, and we think we're doing a good job to look after them.
For Americans who are headed over to London or to England at any time in the near future, if I recall correctly, I got on a train from London, I think about an hour and a half train ride outside of London. Do I have that about right?
That is absolutely correct. So the nearest train station to Stonehenge is called Salisbury, and there's a public bus that takes you from Salisbury train station and drops you off at our doors. If there are any Americans planning on coming to England on their holiday, I would highly recommend a visit to Stonehenge. We have a wonderful exhibition here with over 200 objects that are from thousands of years old, and they tell a story about the people and about the meaning of Stonehenge and how it got you. And then obviously we've got the stones themselves, which are just fantastic. And you know, you can't get that sense and that atmosphere and that energy that the stones give unless you stood in front of them.
It really is amazing to be right in front of it. I got to do it about 20 years ago, and I look forward to getting my kids out there someday soon to see it as well. And I imagine 20 years ago, I remember the stones. I remember there being a shop. I don't think there was a ton else. I think you have a lot more now to do where you can really spend a number of hours out there, visit the stones, see the stones, and immerse yourself in that. But then also, like you said, there's a lot of other activities there that you can engage in, so you can get a better sense of the history of everything there, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We've got a brand new visitor center. We've got a new museum. We've got objects on display. We've even got the houses that we think that the people who built Stonehenge would have lived in based on archaeology. So there's lots going on here. And we're open every day of the year except for Christmas Day. So we're always here to give anyone who wants to come and visit a very warm welcome.
Well, you've had a very long day already. Kate Davies, Director of Stonehenge with English Heritage. Visit english-heritage.org.uk, english-heritage.org.uk for more information. And I will agree, it is well worth a visit. I hope to get back there again. And I hope we talk again, Kate.
Yes, it's been great speaking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And thanks for your patience. Well, we got everything hooked up. Kate Davies from English Heritage. Again, english-heritage.org.uk. Find out more about Stonehenge and plan your visit. News coming up, 720 WGN. Tis the season to be jolly. Second worst Christmas song after 12 days. Deck the Halls? Yeah. There's much better. There's much better. I'm sorry. I'm not a 12 Days of Christmas guy. I'm not a Deck the Halls guy.
By the way, when
we sing... What's wrong with that one?
Deck the Halls is...
When we sing the 12 Days of Christmas over at Gloria's Christmas party.
Yes.
I made the mistake 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Of volunteer, because everyone has to volunteer, air quotes.
Sure.
Volunteer to be one of the days, and you kind of have to act it out.
Okay.
And so I volunteered to be the geese. And I thought it'd be kind of cool if I pulled up some geese. What kind of sound do they make? Cawing?
A honk?
Honking on my cell phone. It didn't really carry in the room.
Okay.
Because we have a piano player. Right. And, you know. So the effect was kind of ruined. So I put it away, and on the next one, I honked.
Okay.
And apparently... I had such a great performance that my appearance as the honking goose was once again requested at this year's party.
Now you've been typecast.
I have been typecast. The album is coming out. And then I'll have a greatest hits album.
Oh, we cannot wait for that.
I'm sure you can.
Okay. All right, it's 4:30 in the morning. You know what we're going to do after this? Chris Gephardt's going to jump on the phone with us from NASASpaceflight.com. There's a Christmas comet making its way across the sky. We'll find out about that after we do this. Here's your news headlines with Roger Badish.
Words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN, 4:34 in the morning. That's Frank Sinatra with I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. My favorite of all time. My favorite Christmas song of all time. In the night sky, speaking of Christmas time, there is a Christmas comet, 46P Christmas comet. What is that all about? Let's talk to our friend Chris Gephardt from NASASpaceflight.com. Hey, Chris, how are you this morning?
I'm doing just fine. How are you, Matt?
We're good. What's going on, bud?
A lot. It's been an exciting week in space, and it's not over yet. After I'm done here, I'm headed down to the Cape for a Falcon 9 launch from SpaceX for the U.S. Air Force. So,
oh, excellent. So a Falcon
all is
9
good
launch.
Today. Yeah.
So what is this launch about?
So this is actually SpaceX's first launch for the Air Force and for first launch for national security. I should say it's not their first launch for the Air Force, but first launch for national security. And it's launching the first in a new generation of GPS satellites. So a few years from now, when you're driving down the road using Waze or Google Maps or Apple Maps, this new GPS constellation is what you'll have to thank for that.
Is it? Is this the one where I'd heard something earlier in the week about a series of really small satellites? Is that what this is?
No, that was actually one that SpaceX launched earlier in the month, a mission that launched 64 small satellites all together from a Falcon 9 out of California, actually.
So 64 small satellites, are they sort of like in a grid then out in space, sort of like the old Iridium satellites were?
So, like, the Iridiums are an excellent example of that, but not quite like that. So they all launched together, and they were deployed within minutes of each other. So they're all sort of clumped together in Earth orbit, as opposed to the Iridiums, which form a net or a blanket around the entire planet.
Hmm. And these 64, are they hovering over the United States, or how do they work?
Yeah, so they're actually in low Earth orbit, so they orbit the planet once every about 90 minutes. And they're in a sun-synchronous orbit, so they actually pass over the same part of the planet at the same exact solar time each and every day. And each one of them is designed to do multiple different things. So it was really a good example of how companies like SpaceX have been able to reduce the cost of launching for companies, because 64 companies were able to build these 64 small satellites, and instead of each paying $60 million to SpaceX for a new rocket, they were each able to split that cost 64 ways among them and pay a lot less. So it's a good example of how SpaceX is reaching that goal of theirs of making space more affordable to everyone.
So those 64 satellites aren't even necessarily related to each other. They're not working those satellites together. Those are all for different companies?
Correct. Yes.
It freaks me out that there's 64 different companies that have a need to throw a satellite up in space. How much stuff do we have floating around up there now?
We have quite a bit floating around up there, which is a problem. And it's actually something that this mission gave the Air Force a little bit of concern over, because the Air Force Space Command in Colorado is tasked with tracking every single object that we put into orbit, no matter how small. And because of the really small nature of some of these satellites, they were and their deployment, they were concerned that they wouldn't be able to effectively track them. And some of the main issues that cropped up around that is because they went to an orbit that's higher than the International Space Station, one of the main goals with Space Command is not only to prevent satellites from slamming into each other up there, which has happened, but it's exceedingly rare, but it's also to provide NASA with all of this tracking data so that NASA knows if they need to nudge the International Space Station up, down, or to the side to avoid one of these debris objects. So this launch gave the Air Force a little bit of concern, but ultimately they approved it when they were convinced that they could properly track all of these objects. But it's a daunting task, because we have hundreds of thousands of objects up in orbit of Earth, some of them satellites, some of them defunct second stages of rockets, some of it debris. So it's quite a cluster that we have up there, actually.
So when we have all of these things up there, and those are concerned about them running into each other, but there's also concerns because there's meteor showers all the time, which could be, from what I understand, as small as grains of sand streaking across the sky. But how do we prevent meteors, different little things like that are floating through the sky, from hitting these different satellites? And does that ever happen? Do they ever sustain damage up there from that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so in terms of preventing that, there's no way really to prevent that. But what we can do is we can fortify our satellites and our spacecraft to be able to withstand an impact from one of these pieces of micrometeoroid debris that are up there, which is the official name that NASA gives them. So if you take, for example, the International Space Station, a lot was thought into that design and added actually later on as well for debris shields that would absorb the impacts from these specific, like small things, grains of sand, the things that are too small to track that could potentially impact the station. And these debris shields have come in really handy. But what we've actually learned a little bit about from the International Space Station and this debris field, because, if you talk about a satellite that's the size of a small car, and then you talk about the space station, which is the size of a football field, the station gives you a much greater area that could potentially be hit. And what we've learned from routinely photographing and observing the station is that there haven't been as many impacts as we've expected. So it helps us understand that the odds of being hit by something up there are quite small. But then you see things like what happened earlier in the year when the Russian Soyuz vehicle that just successfully landed had a leak in it. And the first thought was that it had been hit by a piece of micrometeoroid orbiting debris. That was the first and most logical thought that everyone went to. So it sort of underscored the importance of having these debris shields on our spacecraft to protect them. And it's something that SpaceX has, and it's something that Boeing has as well for the Dragon and Starliner crew transportation vehicles, which should make their first test flights as early as next month.
Now, that is the is that what's going to kind of replace the Soyuz as far as getting people to the International Space Station?
Yeah, great question. So the Soyuz will continue to fly. But in terms of how we'll get crew up there, it'll be a combination of both the Soyuz and the Dragons and the Starliner. So we're going to end up using all three. So what this does is, for the first time since the retirement of the shuttle program in July of 2011, which is over almost 7.5 years ago now, it will mean that the Soyuz is not the only vehicle capable of transporting crew up to the station, which it has been for the last 7.5 years.
But this is not a return to shuttle type vehicles, right? This is rockets that will take people up. This is not something that's going to come back and land, correct?
Yeah, it's not. So it's not a shuttle. It's going back to the days of Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo and capsules. So the rocket will launch the capsule with crew in them up to the space station, and then the crew will get back into that capsule, and only that capsule will come back and land to return the crews.
But will that capsule land, or will they fall by parachute into the ocean and then people get rescued?
Ah, good question. Yes. So they will, so Dragon will descend under parachute in splashdown into the ocean, and Starliner will descend under parachute and land on land somewhere in the western part of the United States. They haven't exactly determined the precise location of that yet.
And is that just... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. And the only other thing I was going to add is that, like, the thing like shuttle for these capsules is that they are designed to be reused. So SpaceX will use these capsules first for crew transportation and then refurbish them for uncrewed cargo resupply missions to the station after that. And Boeing with Starliner will get the capsule back, refurbish it, put more people on it, and launch those capsules again with crew as well. So we're taking the best parts of shuttle and going back to a capsule configuration instead of a winged space plane.
And is it just more economically feasible and maybe safer to do it this way?
It's safer, and that was the big push at the end of the shuttle program, was to design craft that could not only that were a little more robust and less fragile than the shuttle, which had its entire heat shield exposed during launch. These vehicles will launch with their heat shields very safely encased inside of the rocket and under their service modules, so they'll be protected while on orbit.
I see. And so that makes it easier. And so there will still be some reusability of them. In the end, it'll be cheaper. Mm-hmm. And what do you think long-term as far as like the projects that are looking at Mars and things like that? Is that still going to be the same thing, more of a rocket-type system?
So for that, it depends on the agency you look at. So with NASA, the answer to that is definitely. NASA's designing its SLS rocket, which is called, which stands for Space Launch System Rocket. And that uses a conventional rocket, solid rocket boosters, a big tank and engines to get stuff to orbit, and then a capsule that the crew rides in. With NASA also looking at basically building a miniature space station up in space that would then be the vehicle that would transport the crew to and from Mars. But SpaceX is taking a very different track. And it's interesting that you mentioned the space shuttle earlier in comparison to the Dragons and the Starliners for next year, because the big vehicle that SpaceX is designing for Mars is more or less what the space shuttle would look like if we were designing it today with today's technology. It's if any of you guys are familiar with the show Futurama from Matt Groening, the great Simpsons and everything, sure. They had the big green ship that they traveled in, the Planet Express ship. And believe it or not, that's more or less what the BFR, the Big Falcon Rocket, or I think they're calling it now the Big Falcon Starship, looks like. It's except it's white and black. It has almost the exact same color scheme as the space shuttle. but it's huge, where the shuttle could carry 7 people, 11 in an emergency. The BFS is designed to carry 100 people at a time. And it's designed to launch like a rocket. It'll have a rocket underneath it, just like the Falcon 9s do. And that rocket would launch it and come back and land and to be reused. And the spaceship part of it would then continue on to Mars, landing vertically on its tail fins on Mars, and then taking off and coming back to Earth and doing the exact same thing and landing straight up on its butt, so to speak. But it too is designed to be reused. So it's basically what we would design the space shuttle to be if we were designing the space shuttle to be interplanetary. And it's a really cool design. A lot of innovation and a lot of new builds and a lot of new materials are going into this, because if there's one thing SpaceX sets out to do when they get an idea in their head, it's that they're not just going to make it look cool. They're really going to push the envelope, and they're really going to help innovate a lot of new practices that will help in other areas of the industry to reduce costs even more.
And what do you think the likelihood is of that ship actually going to Mars someday?
Oh, very likely. Very likely. I think the current estimate is sometime in the 2020s is what Elon Musk is saying. The president and COO of SpaceX, a wonderful woman named Gwynne Shotwell, has also mentioned the 2020s as being more than feasible for SpaceX with the BFS rocket. And in the world of SpaceX, there's something that's known as Elon Standard Time, which is when you take what Elon says is the deadline and multiply that by a few numbers. And then you have the estimates, the time estimates that Gwynne Shotwell gives, which usually turn out to be much more realistic and within reason match what SpaceX actually is capable of doing. So with both of them saying 2020s, we could, by the end of the next decade, see sending a gigantic spaceship, maybe even with people on it, to Mars.
Well, and you say it could hold up to 100 people. Let's assume they're going to send 100 people to Mars. Who would they be sending to Mars? Like 100 astronauts that are trained for it? Or will this be a little more touristy? Or how would they do that first mission, do you think?
Well, to go back to a famous game show from several decades ago, that's the $64,000 question. We don't know the answer to that. The reality is that there aren't enough astronauts to fill all of those seats. And it would most likely end up being a combination of professionals, if NASA wished to partner with SpaceX on such a mission, or it could be tourists. It could be people who want to go that SpaceX, with NASA's cooperation, then trains for these types of missions. But we don't really know. I mean, the ultimate goal of it, though, just beyond the first mission, is that this is the vehicle that SpaceX envisions as them using to colonize Mars, to establish permanent human presence on the red planet. So it has to eventually be ordinary people going.
Yeah.
In terms of exactly what that first mission is, no one really knows. But, you know, we had assumed that the first test flights of this rocket would also entail some professionals on board. And then a couple months ago, when the lunar flight was announced with the Japanese billionaire buying tickets for 10 or so artists to go with him on this flight, it became abundantly clear that this first flight that's just going to circle the moon next decade might totally be ordinary civilians and people who come from professions who have never been able to go to space before. Wow. So it's exciting in that regard, but it's also a huge shift away from, you know, the Air Force medical professionals who have, you know, predominantly been the ones to go to space so far.
So, Chris, if they come to you and they say, hey, listen, we're doing this whole thing, send in 100 people, we really need somebody to write about the experience, Chris, we got a seat for you. You're going to be gone, what, 6 months to a year? Are you on board?
In a heartbeat.
Really? You'd have no problem getting on that rocket ship.
Yes.
even knowing that
I'd have no problem getting on my rocket, on that rocket. My family might have a problem with me getting on that rocket, but I would have no problem getting on that rocket. No, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, I guess time will tell. We'll have to wait and see where it heads and when we're finally going to be launching that stuff. But boy, I think I'd really have trouble. I think I'd be scared. I don't want to be the first one to Mars. I'm not that into that. Let's develop the technology. Let me see that it's going pretty well, and then I'll see about that. I'd like a few guinea pigs before me, I think, before I take that plunge.
There you go, right? Guinea pigs are always good.
That's right. I'm glad you're willing. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com. Have a wonderful holiday. Thanks so much for being on the phone as always, Chris.
You too. Have a great holiday, Matt. Right. Talk to you in the new year.
Yep, we'll talk to you soon. Chris Gebhardt, NASASpaceflight.com. You can find more information there. We are going to chat with Orion Samuelson, get a preview of the morning show coming up in a few minutes here on 720 WGN.
Lots of snow.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Battish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN Radio. I want to thank PJ Thompson. PJ is a very nice listener we have. She is in Alabama. I don't know if she listens online or if it's bouncing off the ionosphere at night and she's grabbing it, but she's in a nursing home in Birmingham, Alabama, and she always sends me cards, and I think sends them to several people.
Sends them
here.
To everyone.
Does she send them to everybody?
Everyone. She's been doing it since before I started 13 years ago. That's what I was told.
Sent me have a joy-filled Christmas card. Thank you very much, yep. PJ. If you're listening, we very much appreciate you listening and glad we can keep you company as we keep each other company and all of you out there all night long, every weekend here on the Matt Bubala Show from 1 to 5 a.m. on Saturday mornings.